skip to the end. Gotta have faith! Gotta have faith! Gotta have faith! Gotta have faith! Get the fuck up!
Welcome to episode 62 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And I want to keep this intro short and sweet because our last episode was approximately 6 hours long. And I don't want to get into that sort of territory again. So should we get right into the nuts and bolts of what we're going to be covering this episode?
Let's go balls deep.
Oh, 2017 and you've already started with balls deep.
Come on, let's do it.
All right then, Gemma, let's get balls deep. So what is our topic of discussion this time around?
It's the top three character introductions in films. So it was a real thinker, a real thinker.
It took a hell of a lot of research, and I'm really intrigued to see if we get any crossovers here. I suspect we won't.
I don't know. Stick around
for that. Juice them up. Mark, what film are we re-watching?
We are re-watching the, I want to say masterpiece, that ruins and kind of gives away what I think. We are going to be re-watching a film called Donnie Darko. How's that?
It's good, isn't it?
I can't even wait for that. Gemma, who are we masturbating over?
We're going to be masturbating over Al Pacino.
Ooh.
I know, right? AP.
One of the kings of the form. That's going to be a good, good chat. Looking forward to see what comes through on social media for that one. And our main review is Damien Chazelle's La La Land, his follow-up to Whiplash. There's a lot of good stuff coming. We've got a great quiz as well. We're going to give away a lot of cool prizes.
Sorry, my throat's really dry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What is that?
God.
I don't know
if I'm going to struggle for this episode. Has anyone got any sort of drink we could have?
Well, there's this here on the table. What's this?
It says here, Brothers.
Toffee Apple English Cider.
Oh, born in a field in Somerset.
I'm just going to try this.
Yeah, it's just a little sip of that.
It's like medicine. It's beautiful.
Oh, lordy.
I feel great. Mm. I'm ready to do this whole episode now. I was about to call in sick, but I'm up for it.
Do you know what? Let's get started.
Our top three topic is the top three character introductions in film. So what we decided on doing, I don't know about you guys, but how I approached this was I wanted to have a look at the characters that really made a big impact in the film. So it's almost like they didn't really need to do much to kind of make their presence felt. So that's how I kind of got my top three.
Yeah.
Yeah. what do you want to say? I agree. It was something that, I just went for the top three that had the biggest impact for me.
Yeah.
That instantly, I just wanted to find out more. And I was invested to spend the next 2 hours or an hour and a half watching this film just purely because they'd had that much of an effect on me. This is the character I want to find out more about.
Yeah, for me, it was kind of the opposite of that. It was all about whether the introduction was memorable, whether the character then turned out to be important or have any real relevance to the plot. It didn't matter to me. It was just how important that particular event was, how memorable, how much it stuck out for me.
You know, I really like that. I like the fact that we've got kind of different approaches to this. So this is going to be a good topic. I feel it in my bones already. Who the hell wants to go first?
You choose. Who do you like most?
Can I say me? Can I go first?
No, you're not going first.
Boo. Okay, then let's go for Ben.
She likes me more.
You're my favourite.
Yes, correct.
First choice, please.
There's that fiver I
mean. Thank you.
I'm going to go with the easy one, the obvious one, where there might be crossover, actually. Darth Vader.
Ooh,
not for me.
Not for me either.
Oh, good, good. Because you knew I was going to have it, didn't you?
Of course, every time.
So the entrance of Darth Vader in A New Hope, when he first appears on the Rebel ship, he walks down that aisle with some of his henchmen, and all the Rebels just start to flee, and it's the first time you've seen this guy in that imposing black suit. And I would love to have been alive and around at the time, in 1977, to have seen that in the cinema for the first time. Because this was in the days prior to movie magazines and A Million and One trailers and the internet and all these things. You would have seen very little of the Darth Vader character before you were actually in that auditorium in 1977. So imagine how imposing and big that entrance would have been then. You know how big it is to us now, but imagine what it would have been like then.
I think I would have crapped myself.
Yes, I think I probably would have. Well, Mark usually doesn't.
Well, we already know that one. Spoiler
alert. Entrance, my bumhole exit. But yes, that's rude.
TMI. The interesting thing now, though, is because we've now seen Rogue One, we kind of know what leads to that. We now know what happens in effectively the scene before that, because the last couple of scenes of Rogue One take place directly before the first scene of A New Hope. So it's kind of put a new shade on that entrance for us now. And I don't know, it's not taken away from it. It's not taken away from the power of that, because we've had many years to ruminate on the power of that. It just gives it more context. And it kind of makes him seem even more of a badass for me.
I was watching, this is weird that you mentioned this, I was watching a documentary about how important music is and sounds to a film, and they did the entrance of Darth Vader with a different soundtrack. Mm. And it just showed you how important that the music and the score that John Williams did adds to that entrance as well.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just the visuals on that. I think it's that impact of the sound. When you just said then about Rogue One, I also associate it with Episode 3 and the no and the shitty acting, and it does tarnish it for me.
Yeah.
It ruins it. So I love Episode 4, and it is one of the best entrances ever, but it has tarnished it because I associate still with Christian, no acting ability, whatever his name is.
Hayden Christensen.
Hayden Christensen. He should not be allowed to work again, and I know we all... does he sue? I'm just remembering. I remember we dissed him before, and I was worried that we might get a legal letter.
The skip to the end, lawyers are all over it, don't worry.
We're sorted. Yeah. But that tarnished it for me, so I can't quite forget him in the suit and the helmet coming down and him. I just hate it. So
he is a helmet.
It is. He really is. But Ben, that entrance is... And you know, I was late to watching Star Wars. I wasn't watching it as a kid. And as an adult, it hit me hard, as even when I was a kid. So unbelievable.
So imposing as well. Yeah. Like, iconic, and to the point where it's still terrifying to this day, even back then in the 70s. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing to do.
Because I don't own the DVD or Blu-ray, I'm quite looking forward to when Rogue One does come out, because then I can watch them back to back. And then seeing him going apeshit in the hallway, getting people by the neck, slashing people up, and then seeing him, oh, that's going to be even better.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it might actually add to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think so too.
Time will tell. What a start.
I know, right? So, Mark, I want you to try and top that one.
You all know me. You know what I do for a living. Quint Jaws.
Yeah, I had this in my list, and it was kind of borderline with another one. I thought, I'm going to take it out because Mark's going to have it anyway.
I'll catch the bird for you. The room's full of people. They're there with the blackboard, and you hear the... I can't recreate it, and I'm not... I have to scratch
it
in.
Oh, God.
But that sound, after a few minutes of them all talking about who's going to catch it, what they're going to do, what price are they going to put on, and you just hear those chalk fingers. Oh, it goes straight through you. Horrible sound, really. Ugh. And then you just see him in his chair, just so relaxed, so reserved, and he just gives that whole speech, and instantly you're like, this guy knows what he's talking about. I'll catch the head, the tail, the whole damn thing. But the way he refers to it as a bird, I'll catch the bird for you. But I'm gonna... he wants more money, doesn't he? He says, it won't be easy. Something about 10,000. I'll need 10,000 because it'll swallow you whole. And you know how much I love Jaws. I'm not ever going to leave this off. Quint is one of my favourite characters ever. Mm. But that's how you make an entrance. The whole room's silent just from the chalkboard. Mm. Yeah. And then when he's eating some sort of, like, it looks like a Pringle. It's obviously not a Pringle at the time.
70s Pringle.
But he's eating something. And it's just the way he's chewing and just not really, I'm here if you want me, take me. If not, I'm off. And then he walks off with his mate just down the hallway. And that's it. You're just like, oh my God, I want to see more of him. And he is going to catch this.
And the interesting thing is, you know, as you well know, I didn't see Jaws for the first time until, 18 months ago or something. And it's now one of my favorite all-time films. Love it. But over the years, many, many times, I had seen the whole nails on the chalkboard thing used, you know, kind of in parody. I didn't realize it was parody at the time because I didn't know it was from Jaws. But it shows you how indelible and how much that entrance has lived on. The fact that nails on a chalkboard, part of it, has been used and reused so many times.
It's everywhere, isn't
it? Dozens, hundreds, if not, you know, over the years.
It's absolutely awesome. Like, you know, I could sit and do a whole episode on Jaws.
Yeah, funnily enough, on my Secret Santa at work, I actually got a Jaws phone cover case. I will show it to you off air. Like, I'll do it in a bit. It's at the bottom of my bag now.
We'll Instagram it for those because they'll feel like they're being left out.
I think so, yeah. So stick around.
Robert Shaw, he is one of the best, and this is my most watched film. I was never going to leave it off. Like Ben, there's no point in me picking Star Wars or Jaws. Those are always going to be ticked off, so... There we go.
The other thing I love about the entrance is his voice, because he sounds like a grizzled old sailor, which is exactly what he is.
Yeah.
He sounds like a pirate. He's got that bizarre accent you can't quite pinpoint, but it works perfectly. He just sounds like a guy who's been at sea for about 40 years.
Sea accent. I'm going to stick with the 70s. My first choice is Willy Wonka from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I've got it too.
Basically... This dude is so enigmatic, even when, I think he makes his appearance, about probably 40 minutes into the film? It's you've got a long wait until you actually see him in the flesh. And people talk about him, they hear all these amazing stories. He's got workers in a factory, he's this, he's that. But we see him at a parade when the golden ticket winners are just about to do their factory tour. And out comes Willy Wonka. He's got a big top on. He's got like a crushed velvet purple iconic jacket and a walking stick. And he's limping out of the factory. And everyone's like, oh, God, what's going on here? You know, I mean, he's not up to the job, really, is he?
Is he claiming benefits on the side? Yeah, what's going on here?
Yeah. Have you made a claim? And he just makes his way down on the red carpet, still limping, and everyone's deathly quiet. And then he leaves his cane sort of stuck in a particular point and continues to limp, falls, but then goes into a fancy forward roll. And he's like, wait, I'm all right, guys, come on in. But immediately that makes you think, can you trust him? Is he going to be like pulling your leg all throughout the tour? Is he actually going to be like this crazy ass bastard that we don't know about? It's just the fact that when you first meet him, you still can't make up your mind about him. And even to the very end scene as well, when you actually realise that he does care about little old Charlie and his grandpa. Just, it made such an impression on me, even when I was a kid, about 5 years old. You know, I mean, I'm of an older generation now, and it still sticks me to this day. It's a great way to come into a film.
It's brilliant. That's why I picked it as well, just because you don't see it coming. Are so gutted because you expect this absolute legend straight
like
away.
Like, oh my God,
it's like meeting Santa or someone. Yes. You're like, this is it. This is, oh my God, this is going to be so iconic. Oh, he looks like Yoda. He's struggling with the stick. He's really struggling. What a letdown. And you're going to want me to spend the whole day with this guy, and I've ate 25 chocolate bars just to try and get to meet this guy. Yeah. Then boom. It's brilliant.
I think there was something you said there, Gemma, about how it makes you not be able to trust him immediately. Yeah. And that's exactly how I felt. And that sticks with me through the whole film. I never really liked the guy. I know at the end you're supposed to, but I never really liked the guy because that put me on edge with him from the very the very beginning.
Yeah.
And he always seemed like a slightly off-kilter character to me.
I mean, God, making those kids like at that, you know, that train tunnel, no, not train tunnel, you know, that boat tunnel scene. Mm. And there's all those trippy LSD sort of effects and videos with like a slug crawling over a guy's lips. Like, that is not kid friendly.
No.
He should be on some form of list.
Imagine watching that on drugs.
He's got Jimmy Savile's hair.
Yeah. And he reminds me of Michael Jackson. It's a mixture of all these people that have allegedly been with kids in
Candies.
One. Yeah.
Candies.
Is that why then Johnny Depp went full on Michael Jackson in the remake?
Didn't hold back, did he?
No.
He went full method.
I
hope he didn't go full method if he was playing Michael Jackson.
I absolutely hate the remake.
Meaning he made loads of number one hits. What are you talking about?
Everybody hates remakes that don't do well. But that was one where it was so bad that I don't mind Johnny Depp.
Mm.
I don't. But he offended me in that. And I kind of wanted to say, you've just ruined this film for me, this great book. Yeah. Roald Dahl will not be happy with this.
Yeah, you're almost willing it to be bad as well.
Ugh, it's like, terrible.
Stone him.
Abysmal.
Let's move on from being so negative.
So my next pick is Daniel Craig as James Bond in Casino Royale.
Taking names and kicking ass!
Now, you could argue that the character, in fact, was introduced some 44 years prior in Dr. No, and that would be accurate. The character of James Bond was introduced back in 1962. However, I'm talking about the current iteration of the James Bond character. And I do effectively take them as different characters because Daniel Craig's Bond is so wildly different from every other Bond that came before him. He is nothing like it because the current Bond we have is in the Jason Bourne era and is in that mould. And this opening scene, this opening introduction in Casino Royale really, really hits that home. So what happens is, in the opening scene, we're in Prague. It's a black and white flashback scene. Daniel Craig's Bond is in an office building. A rogue MI6 agent comes in. The MI6 agent is a bit smug, says, you know, M can't have sent you here to kill me. If they would have sent anyone, they would have sent a 00. You need to have two confirmed kills to be a 00 and you don't have any. Then we get a further flashback to Bond beating the holy hell out of this guy in a toilet cubicle. He's throwing him through the toilet doors. He's smashing his head into the sink. He's garrotting him with like a tie. He's then drowning him in the sink. The guy isn't drowned, so he shoots him in the head. It is the most brutal thing you've ever seen in a Bond film. You've never seen anything like this. Timothy Dalton didn't do this. George Lazenby didn't do this. And you can be sure as shit that Roger Moore, winking and smirking, did not do this. We then cut back to Prague. And the guy's like, okay, well, that's one kill then. The second one's a lot easier. Bond then shoots that guy in the head and is like, yep, it is. And you see Bond for the first time as a hitman, because that's effectively what he is. He's a spy, but he's also a contract killer. He has the legitimacy to go and murder people on the behalf of the state. But you don't really see that before. You just see him as the international playboy in the earlier iterations. This one is saying to you, this is the new Bond. This ain't your mama's Bond. This is the modern Bond. And it is amazing.
I love that. This ain't your mama's Bond.
But it's so true, because that's probably the one that my nan and granddad won't watch now, because it's not traditional enough. And, oh, he shouldn't be like this, and it's not like that. But It's a really good point. You know, it sets the standard straight away. This is my market stall setup. This is how he's going to be. Get used to it. Mm. He's going to be completely different to all the other Bonds. Bam.
Yeah.
It's almost like a regeneration of Bond.
It really is, yeah. Almost Doctor Who-esque regeneration. Yes. It's a completely different character to the ones that came before it. All the other previous Bonds had their own quirks and ticks. They were all slightly different, but of a type. They were all international playboys. This Bond is a hard-nosed spy, and he kept that going for three films and then ruined it with Spectre when he did become a winking and smirking idiot.
That intro from that film when he lands on the couch and it's like a musical.
Brushes the dirt off his shoulder. Oh. Slapstick nonsense.
I'm done with it now.
Me too.
Piss me off.
Well, let's move on to the next one.
Every choice ends in a negative.
Well, I've just had mine. I've just had mine. It was Willy Wonka, so...
That's back to me. Well, let's go for the baddest bitch in film history. Let's go El Driver from Kill Bill Volume 1.
Very good.
I love this one because she's so beautiful. And she's got this beautiful figure, the long blonde hair, stunning face. But... you see her walking in high heels in a hospital ward, singing along to the theme tune of Twisted Nerve, which is a 1960s horror film, which now is such an iconic bit of music. I used to actually have it as my ringtone on my phone, so whenever anybody called me, it scared the shit out of me.
Is this Gemma's phone cast? Because that's all she's talking about.
Yeah, I think she's trying to get an endorsement.
Hashtag Modern Family. You know, she doesn't say a word. You just see her walking along, whistling this tune. Then the screen splits to the bride, comatose in bed, until the next screen where we see Elle sort of suiting up as a nurse. We then realise that actually she's administrating a drug. Oh, wait, she's going to go over and kill her. And of course, the music just swells up, becomes a lot more frantic, a lot more psychotic as well. And then we see the title card flashes up saying that she's a part of the Deadly Viper Assassin Squad. We're not told at all that she's a villain. All we know is that she's a very attractive woman on the screen. However, her actions, the music, her demeanour and the fact we see her with a big old syringe suggests that we already know that. We automatically know she's a villain. It's such a clever introduction.
It is.
I don't like that film.
I know, you hate the first bones one. Of it.
It's the second one I don't like. I like the first
There was
part.
No need for the second ever. Yeah.
Although I did like the fight between her and the bride. You know, when they're sort of smashing the shit out of each other in a trailer. But yeah, you're right. It is what it is.
She does look fantastic as well, that outfit.
She's a babe in that outfit.
Absolutely stunning.
Mm. There's something about the eye patch as well that does it for me.
Aye.
Don't know why.
Aye, aye.
Aye, aye. Bloody hell. I don't understand what you mean, Ben. I bet she was a good pupil at school, but...
Stop.
I see through you, Mark.
Both of you. Stop.
It was love at first sight.
Cease. Right.
No, so it is a great entrance. I'm not a big fan of the film. I really do need to revisit it. Mm-hmm. And when they did the special edition with the two together, and there's all the animation and everything put in, I think it was an extended uncut, and it didn't go black and white, it stayed colour.
Yes.
It was the first ever time. It did work for me, but again, it's one of my weak
Each
films
to
of Tarantino,
own.
And
yeah.
that's
Each
totally
to
cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Is it me?
It can be you. It can be you, because you only had sort of half an answer before. Yeah.
So this is the very first time this has happened. You can see here's all my notes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see what I've done to the bottom one? I've
scribbled it out.
Because I was watching a film over the weekend that then replaced it.
Oh.
So this is the first for me. So it was going to be, and I'm not worried because I don't believe you'll have it. It was going to be the T-Rex in Jurassic Park, but I've talked about that to death. But then I was watching a film at the weekend and I thought, do you know what? That's going to make the list. So I was watching Con Air.
Yeah.
Which is a great, great film. And it's the scene when we meet all the convicts for the first time. Now, most people, there's a lot of different convicts. We get, you know, the amazing Nick Cage with his hair flowing. But for me, it wasn't. It was my favourite personal one is Cyrus the Virus.
Yeah, big time.
I absolutely love this. John Malkovich, we don't normally see with a bicked head. Mm. Instantly harrowing. Reminds me a bit of Stone Cold Steve Austin. He had that look, didn't he? He beefed
Thespian
up.
Stone Cold.
He looked hard as nails. But what worked for me was the narration from John Cusack, whose voice I could listen to forever. He's one of the coolest motherfuckers around. His name is Cyrus Grissom. To you, Cyrus the Virus. 39 years old, 25 of them spent in institutions. Instantly, like, what is this guy all about?
Yeah.
You see him walking off the bus. He's got his chains on and he doesn't give a shit. His eyes, his focus, nothing is going to faze this guy. He's been... It's amazing. This line, he's killed 11 inmates, incited 3 riots and escaped twice. He likes to brag he's killed more men than cancer. And instantly, you just think, this is one scary dude that you're not going to mess with. And I don't see John Malkovich as that. I see John Malkovich as a bit of a comedian, as a bit of a over-the-top, silly character that I always warm to. This was the first time I thought, my God, what has this guy done? They check in his mouth to see if he'd done anything. His chains are there. And then you just see the pan shot of him walking off, not caring. All the police officers are either side of him. There's a helicopter above in case he does anything. That just left me going, oh my God.
The really clever thing they did is what you've just done there is hyping him. Actually having in voiceover, you know, this is what he's done, this is who he is, this is what he thinks of himself. That really sells you on him. He could be the complete antithesis of that. It wouldn't matter because they've sold him with that monologue alone.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it just, then you're like, I just want to know what else. And then in the later on in the film, you see that he's, well, you know, if you haven't seen Con Air, what the hell have you done with your life?
Right?
He is the mastermind between everything. He can get that whole plane full of convicts against each other, fighting, inmates going crazy, and he is the mastermind. Mm. So if you haven't seen it, watch it, but my God, that entrance.
It was one of those that I was intending on picking as a rewatch at some point. I'm not going to because I've ruined it now, but it's kind of one of those that I don't think we'd be able to dissect very well. It'd mostly be us just going, this bit was really cool, and this bit was really cool, but this bit was cooler. That'd be that, like, 10 minutes.
Put the bunny back in the box.
I really want to see John Malkovich do a film of Stone Cold Steve Austin's life.
That'd be amazing.
I'd love it, because that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. Get his agent.
Get Vinnie Mac on the phone. He'll sort it.
I was loving watching it again. It's probably been 3 or 4 years, but those action films from the 90s, you just saw whenever it was, it probably wasn't 90s.
Yeah, I think it was,
95, 96?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Perfect. And that's when Cage knew what he was doing. Final choice, Ben?
Yeah, I'm going to wrap it up with another Tarantino pick. I've gone with Winston Wolfe, the cleaner, Harvey Keitel from Pulp Fiction. Now, let's sort of forget the fact that he's now selling insurance in really...
I try to. Now you're bringing it back.
Sorry.
It's too real.
Adverts that entirely infuriate me. But if we just think about the film, and this is what I meant when I said about a character who doesn't really have that much to do in the film. He's not an overly important character, but his entrance is just so cool. So what's happened is Jules and Vincent have accidentally killed a guy in their car. They've taken it to their friend Jimmy's house, and Jimmy is not happy about it. They call Marcellus Wallace, and Marcellus sets them up with their cleaner, Winston Wolfe. So you see a phone call being put into Harvey Keitel, and he says, that's 30 minutes away, I'll be there in 10. Then you see a Chiron come up on the screen as his car's pulling up to the house that says something like 9 minutes and 45 seconds later. He then knocks on the door, Jimmy answers the door, and he says, I'm Winston Wolfe, I solve problems. And that's all you need to know about the guy. This is who he is. You just think, this is the coolest man on this earth. And one of the things I love, one of my favourite lines of his that is now ruined because it's in the latest insurance advert, is where Jimmy asks him if he wants a coffee, and he says, yeah, lots of cream, lots of sugar. And I just like the way how he's non-specific about that. Just lots of cream, lots of sugar. And they've now used that line in the latest goddamn insurance ad.
And I don't think I can actually watch the film again now without thinking of some... There's some people that broke down, haven't they? Or
on a hen.
How can we help you?
Piss off.
Does he need the money, really?
Apparently so. The thing that annoys me, and I've said this on a previous podcast, is I am sure that Quentin Tarantino must own the rights to the character Winston Wolfe. He must do. So he has then given them permission to use that character in those adverts. That infuriates me.
Does he need the money as well?
I've got to believe that Harvey rang him up and said, look, mate, I need a few quid. Can I use this character? Yeah, do we want?
I wish
Tarantino had gone, I'll give you, how much are you getting? 25 quid, right? I'll give you 30. Don't do this
to
the character.
Don't worry about the extra fiver. It's mates rates.
Every pick ends in a negative.
And in that case, thankfully, I've got a pick that's going to definitely end on a positive. My last pick, and it's 30 seconds of comic genius, is Brick Tamland from Anchorman.
Oh, yes!
The Legend of Ron Burgundy. Oh, no. It's 30 seconds, right? Mark can sit out on this one.
You said it wasn't going to end in a negative. He's going to bitch about Anchorman at the end of all
this. I'm turning my mic off.
This is just the best 30 seconds of absolute comic genius. We basically meet Brick at one of Ron Burgundy's shindigs in his kitchen, spooning mayonnaise in a toaster, pushing the lever down smelling it as if you weren't making toast. Very, very odd. He introduces himself to the camera, breaks the fourth wall, and says people like him because he is polite and rarely late. He comments that he likes ice cream and a nice pair of slacks. Then he makes a statement regarding his future, saying that in future events and years to come, doctors will discover that he has an IQ of 48 and will be labelled, as some might say, mentally retarded. He then smiles into the camera, unaware but content, and continues to toast the mayonnaise into the toaster. wonderful.
Oh, my sweet brick. I killed a guy. I saw that.
You need to lay down low for a while.
Oh, no, not again.
But it's just the fact that he's such an innocent and ridiculous character, but you can't help but warm to him. Well, me and Ben can't help but warm to him anyway. But it's just the fact that it sets him up for the entire film with just these ridiculously stupid interjections. That is just so quotable.
Isn't there a bit at the end of the film? So, as you say, at the start, it says they like to find out he's an IQ or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And at the end of the film, they say something like, in future, he then had a high-ranking position in the Bush administration.
Yes, not hard to believe.
Have we ever done this as a rewatch? We haven't.
Wankerman. Didn't you veto it? Didn't you?
I don't know.
I'm
still going to stick to that. Sorry. It's never going to happen.
Damn it.
What has social media got? Ben said he's looking forward to hearing this. Mm. Let's see what they got.
We've got a few ones here, actually. Ben Mullings at Ben Mullings on Twitter said, Darth Vader in A New Hope, The Thing in John Carpenter's The Thing.
Never seen it.
And the late suffering of Spider-Man in last year's Civil War.
That was good. Yeah.
It's a great introduction. Secret Transmission at Secret Transpod. Tyler Durden from Fight Club.
Yeah.
Roy Munson from Kingpin. Oh my God, yes. And Joker from The Dark Knight Rises. We've then got Movie Geek Cast.
Dark Knight Rises?
Says here, Dark Knight Rises.
And Star Knight. He's definitely not in the last one.
Do your research. I am just.
Yes.
Oh, that's
Don't
good.
Shoot the messenger. That's fine.
No, it's fine. Don't know who to blame then.
Block him.
Movie Geek Cast at Movie Geek Cast said Sergeant Hartman in Full Metal Jacket.
Big time.
Terrifying. John Doe walking into the police station in Seven.
Oh, with all the blood over his shirt. Right. Amazing.
And then Freddy's creepy introduction in Nightmare on Elm Street. We then have Zombie Kitty from Zed Kitty Podcast. Ray in Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Yep.
Captain Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Is that where he's sort of on the mast of the ship that's sinking and he's just coming into the jetty? That is good.
To be fair, that came through more than any other suggestion on social media, so you can't knock it.
No, that is
good. That's when he used to act.
And then Ringu?
Oh, Sudeikis. Right, yes, you've talked about that, haven't you?
I did.
Neil Sedaka.
Yeah. Come through the TV singing Sweet Caroline. Shelley A at Shelster_86. Hit Girl and Big Daddy on Kick-Ass, which is
genius.
Very good.
Incredible.
Genius. Indiana Jones from Raiders of the Lost Ark. And again, Jack Sparrow, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And then lastly, we've got Carl Brown coming in at Sucker Punch. That's without the E. Ramona Flowers from Scott Pilgrim. Matthew Patel from Scott Pilgrim.
Oh.
And the rest of the evil exes from, I think it says here, Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, they like Scott Pilgrim.
I wonder if she's a fan of Scott Pilgrim.
maybe. But yes, thank you everyone who got in touch with us on social media. And of course, keep them coming because we love to read them out.
You love to read them out. I don't have to anymore, so I don't have to say any wrong names.
I get joy out of this.
Good. Next topic choice is Ben.
It is me. I'm going to keep it simple. Top three Westerns.
Oh! Pew, pew, pew!
We've been to see La La Land, the new film from writer-director Damien Chazelle. It's a musical starring Emma Stone as an aspiring actress who falls in love with Ryan Gosling's character, who is a struggling musician. The film then tracks the ups and downs of their relationship as their careers become successful and go off in different directions. As ever, here be spoilers, so if you haven't yet seen the film, please do skip to the end of this particular section and come back to it once you've seen it. I'm going to throw this to you first of all, Gemma, because towards the end of the film, you were sat to my left and I could hear a bit of snivelling and I wasn't sure whether you had a cold or something or whether you were actually crying. So did it really move you that much, this film?
Yeah. That was not snivelling. That were tears.
You didn't have a tissue either, did you?
Nope, I had to use the back of my hand.
That wouldn't be the first time.
So tell me about your feelings towards this film.
Oh God, it's so magical. It's magical, it's enchanting, it's just an absolute joy to be watching a film of this calibre in today's modern age as well. It just harks back to this beautiful golden age of Hollywood where breaking out into song and dance and spectacular slick choreography and bright colours was the norm. I absolutely love this, and I'm super happy that we have seen this and we're going to be reviewing this. So, yeah, I loved it.
So did you like it or not? I couldn't tell from that,
2 out of 10.
That gushing intro. Literally, probably.
So that's mine.
Mark, thoughts?
Do you know what? This is going to be the most interesting one because I want to hear yours.
Mm.
I'm just sitting here now. I will echo every word she just said.
Okay.
I absolutely love this. This was a visual treat. I want to see it again now.
Yeah, me too.
I don't want to record. I just want to go and see it again. That director is the most impressive, intelligent, brave director in this world right now. To produce that on that level with so much detail in every scene and every colour and every bit of choreography and every bit, so not even just perfect,
I know, right?
Is mind-blowing. And this will be the director we talk about, the way we talk about now, someone like Hitchcock in 50 years' time. Mind-blowing.
High praise indeed.
Just wow. This is what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, come on, here we go.
Rip it a new one.
It was a real struggle for me, kids. I'm sorry. There are so many things about it to enjoy. There are lots and lots of things I liked. So we'll cover in detail the direction, the choreography and the acting, certainly. And I loved all of those things. But the thing I really didn't like was the singing. It just, every time they started singing, a little part of me died. And the truth of it is, I just hate musicals. I just despise musicals. I don't see the value in them. I don't see the point in them. I don't see the need for uncontextualized song and dance numbers in the middle of a piece of film. Why do it? Get rid of it. Keep that on the stage. I don't know why they exist, frankly. And because of that, because that's my viewpoint, it's very difficult for me to then review it. Trying to review a musical would be me like me trying to review a Kanye West album or an episode of The X Factor. Because I have an inbuilt hatred towards the form, I can't possibly be objective. And it's a real shame because I enjoyed so much of the film, but every time they started singing, I just slipped further and further down into my seat thinking, when will the misery cease?
It felt like that film was 2-0 down before it even kicked off for you.
For me,
it was,
big time.
It really did.
Big time. It was trying to stage a comeback and it was never going to have a chance.
It's as soon as everyone started getting out of their cars and then I could hear it going...
Because there's an opening dance number. It's all people on like a freeway going through Los Angeles and there's gridlock. And then everyone gets out their cars and they start doing this song and dance number about it being a sunny day
It's another day of sun.
And my brain went into standby mode. I couldn't be in the room any longer. I just couldn't.
I was literally sat there. I could hear him huff and I thought, there's another 2 hours, seven minutes to go yet, mate. And I understand because I know your feelings towards it. So it's never going to completely win you over.
No.
But there's so much. That intro felt like a Gap advert. It was so colourful and everyone's wearing different bright colours. And I expected to say, the new Summer Ranger, Gap soon.
Yeah.
It was so like the Muppets as well. That's what it reminded me of, the Amy Adams Muppet film. Really over the top, really, really flamboyant, really colourful. And I thought, this has got no chance of winning Ben over now. And I kind of wish it didn't have that intro to kind of, let's just reel him in slowly.
Yeah.
But it was full hog.
Literally, it was the equivalent of shoving a child in a swimming pool. Going, there you go, you're in now.
You're in now, you're in the deep end.
You're in, you're getting out.
Sink or swim.
Take your floaties away from you.
And I honestly think if this didn't have the musical numbers, and you can keep the dance numbers, I liked the dance numbers. I thought they were fantastic and beautifully choreographed. But the singing just upset me. Get rid of that, you've really got something. Get rid of that 20 minutes and put in an extra 20 minutes of Gosling and Stone just riffing with each other, because that was fantastic. Another 20 minutes of that, I'd be a happy bunny. But just, I can't do it.
I'll get Final Cut Pro, I'll make a special edition. The story might not completely make sense, but it'll be a Ben cut. It'll be 1 hour and 20 minutes, no singing, done.
Yeah.
Masterpiece, 10 out of 10. So where do we start with this film then? Let's be realistic. Let's talk about the performances. Let's get straight in there.
Let's
pick the man that I want to marry. I'll say it now.
Not before
I love
me
him
first. Come
more
on.
Than anyone else. I am gay for him. I am. I've said it on 50,000 people. I am gay for Ryan Gosling. He is the most perfect man that's ever been born. He is. He's beautiful. He can act. He can dance. He can play the piano. And he can now sing. What else? What can't he do?
There's nothing he can't do.
I bet he's a very tender and generous lover as well, Mark.
he can be rough with me. I don't care. I absolutely love this guy. And I, you know, is it Stupid Crazy Love?
It's Crazy Stupid Love.
Great film. Stupid really good
love.
Film.
That's a wonderful film.
That's where we first got to see the chemistry between these two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Emma Stone is stunning. She's the person I want to marry one day.
Well done. You're going to cheat on him, are you? Because you just said you want to marry him.
If he was to be gay and settle with me and me and him got married, then I would stick with him. But if not, and I stay heterosexual, and I then she will be the backup.
Or you could have kind of a Mormon situation where you're all sort of in, you know, big love style.
Polygamous.
Yeah.
But that's where I really saw this chemistry work. So when I saw the trailer and thought, oh, it's more of that, I was sold straight away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But let's just talk about Ryan Gosling. Let's be realistic. Not just that he's a heartthrob and I want to kiss him.
Stop there.
Yes. Come on, Gemma.
You would have thought I would be the one that would be saying all of this stuff. I've not said a word yet. Ryan Gosling is just a master. He really is. And as well, he's not just a pretty boy. You know, he's actually done some really great roles in his film career as well. You know, notably Drive as well. Like, he is a absolute demon in Drive. However, this might be the film that I think might get him... Because has he had any Oscar nominations before?
I can't recall.
Because he's done some films like, you know, Half Nelson, Lars and the Real Girl, and I don't think he's got any award recognition from those films.
Was he nominated for Blue Valentine?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think he might have been nominated for things like Independent Spirit Awards, but I don't know that he got an Oscar.
He's definitely not won one. I've not seen him up the on the stage in a suit.
He really do. But I think this might be, I mean, we should be getting some Oscar nominations in the next few weeks, right?
Yes. Very soon, February, I think.
I genuinely hope to see a Best Actor nod for Ryan Gosling. I think he thoroughly deserves it.
I think in the run-up to this, I think, you know, there's been a lot of the smaller guilds giving out awards, and I think he's been mostly overlooked. Emma Stone is getting nominated for a lot of things, and I think she is fantastic in this film. She's so charismatic and so magnetic and just holds the screen. That sort of, she's got very severe bone structure now. She seems to have lost a lot of weight in the last few years. And whatever your thoughts on that, it doesn't matter. But it makes her face really striking, especially because of those big alien eyes she has. She just looks fantastic on screen. And there's a lot of people saying she's one of the front runners for the Best Actress Oscar, and it wouldn't be undeserved. But I think he outshone her in this. I thought this was Gosling's film more so than hers.
It's amazing that both of them were so strong.
Like
you said, it's bouncing off
and
each other.
Not only that as well, at the first half of the film, because it really is a film of two halves as well, the first half of the film is very reminiscent of kind of the 1960s screwball comedies, like the sex comedies of like Doris Day and Rock Hudson. And they are it. That them two together create absolute magic together. They are so, so like magnetic. They are so inviting.
Yeah.
You can't help but root for them. And as I was commented at the beginning of the segment as well, there is a reason why I cried. We'll go into it a bit later on, but there is a reason why I cried. And I think because of their chemistry together, it is mainly responsible for that.
The word you've just said there hits it. It's chemistry. They have chemistry to burn. If it turned out that they were the leads in every film ever made from this point forward, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't be mad at that because they are so good together. I think this is the third film they've done together now.
Gangster Squad.
Which I never saw. I don't know.
It's not bad. It's the weaker one out of the three.
Yeah.
But it's still watchable.
But I'm happy to see those guys work with each other for the foreseeable future.
Heck yes.
In my head, they're actually together. They're living happily with children in a house.
The tears are
going
to start to flow again.
They are just being filmed. It's just like a documentary of their life.
Oh, God.
Is she actually crying?
She might be weeping again.
But I think they'll both be up for... I'm going to say it now. I think they'll both be up for an Oscar nom. And that's huge.
I do too. And I would like to see that.
And even though I didn't like the film, I think they'd be fully deserving of those nominations because they were great.
Oh, that dance scene as well after the party. And they're sort of overlooking LA. And just like the tap dancing and the choreography where they're both synchronised and how they slowly are just falling for each other. It's just so whimsical. But
It is. It's magical. The way it's done is really beautiful. Yeah. Everything they try and explain... Yeah. Of falling in love and not falling out of love and
like you're not right for me. Well, you're not right for me either. But they clearly are.
Exactly. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Absolutely awesome.
It's with the exception of the songs, it's very economically written. There's not a lot of dialogue. It's very simple, sort of rat-a-tat back and forth dialogue, which goes into what you were saying, like those old Rock Hudson type films. It's that kind of banter, and it works really well with those two guys because they have such chemistry. It's just a shame they keep singing.
I want to talk about the director. I'm not going to try and pronounce his name. Come on, Ben.
Damien Chazelle.
There we go. Yeah. It's not a hard one, but it's I just know I'll say it
also
wrong.
Also as well, I had it written down on my my little tablet as well, so I didn't forget, because I keep calling him David Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle.
He has a way of making music sound like the very first time you've ever heard music. In Whiplash, that jazz drumming and everything that went, the horns, the brass section was... It got inside my body while I was listening in the cinema and shook me. And he did it again in this film. The way he makes a piano sound and visualise the way it's played and everything, I now want to listen to jazz the rest of my life. I don't want to listen to Pantera or Deftones today. I will tomorrow. I'll be well up for Deftones again. But right now, I just want to listen to that soundtrack. He made it sound like the best jazz I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. How does he do it?
That piano.
His soundtrack
thing as well.
Is just.
Yeah. I did actually tell you guys before we watched the film, I downloaded the soundtrack about 2 weeks ago. So I've been listening to a lot of it leading up to this review as well. And yeah, it's beautiful.
It is great.
And am I right in thinking, is it as a chap called Horowitz who did a lot of the composing of the music? Oh God, I can't remember his first name. I felt ever so bad.
Let's call him Dave.
Dave?
Good old Davey boy.
Matey boy Horowitz.
Big D.
But it's the original music is just something else. And it is original as well. It's not like a bit of music that I've heard before in films. And I don't watch a lot of musicals. I'm not that person.
Yeah. That's why we hired you.
Hooray. Yes. But it just had this complete fresh take on sort of a musical score as well. I think it is going to completely sweep the Oscars as well. We're going to see Best Original Song with maybe City of Stars as well. We're going to see,
director,
cinematography, costume designer.
The music did nothing for me. When we came out of the cinema, both I could hear you two talking to each other saying that you're going to have those songs stuck in your head for days, for weeks. I've forgotten them already. That sounds to me like now that's going to be stuck in my head.
Fair point. But I loved it, and I will listen to the soundtrack now, and I thought it was really, really well done.
I need to
listen
to some.
Don't worry, tomorrow I'll be Deftones.
I need to listen to some Slayer to cleanse my palate.
I want to talk about this director. I've started touching there, but his actual way he shots is... camera motion, the way he makes things look vintage, the colouring.
Mm-hmm. Also, as well, I'd like to point out the dance sequences were all done in one shot. The singing was all done in one shot, so that includes the very beginning, the Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone sort of rat-a-tat-tat.
The choreography of all of those singing and dance, especially the dance numbers, was phenomenal. It's great direction, great. I don't know who the cinematographer on this was, but they did fantastic work. The colour palette was beautiful. It was so vivid. The second musical number where Emma Stone's character
and someone in the crowd. Is that with her mates?
Yeah,
as if Ben's going to know that.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
It's on my iPod. Jesus Christ. So that one, where she's dancing around her house with her mates, and they're all wearing different coloured dresses. She's got blue, then one mate's got red, one's yellow, one's green, I think. Yeah. And it's so bold and so vivid, and it's visually impressive.
Technicolor.
I just should have put my fingers in my ears.
In Ben's head, he was listening to Chino singing some Deftones tracks, but the best music video ever. I'm loving this director. I just don't think he can do anything wrong right now. And I'm already excited about what you'll do next.
I want him to do something that isn't music related. I think he's done three films. I think he did a film before Whiplash that was kind of an independent minor film that didn't have much play. But I believe that was about music as well. And it's like, okay, lad, we get it. You know your shit when it comes to music. Branch out a little. You know, there was a point where Scorsese stopped making gangster picks because people wanted to know if he could do other stuff. This is what Chazelle needs to do now.
Well, he made Whiplash in order to make La La Land.
Really?
This was the jewel in the crown. This was the project that he wanted to get on board with and just make. So in order to make it, Whiplash had to happen.
Well, I prefer the appetizer to the entree, to be honest.
Oh, no, I will take it as a buffet. I've got my plate.
And a finger buffet.
That's right. And I'm literally going in hands deep. All on my plate.
Six.
Nom, nom, nom.
I worry that you're right there, though, Ben. I think his next film, probably because he's so obsessed and he's fine-tuned it to an art. He's an art. He's an artist, isn't he? He's nailed it. He'll carry on. He'll probably do the Dave Grohl life story next or something else.
Wait, no, we've got to get him on for John Malkovich does Stone Cold Steve Austin.
As long as there's bits of Stone Cold playing jazz flute or something.
Oh, my God, because that is the bottom line. Because Stone Cold said so.
I didn't realise... because I haven't read much about this. This is what I like now. With these new films, I'm trying to make it 2017 not to watch every trailer, read everything, go a little bit more in there, a bit of mystery. I didn't know J.K. Simmons was in this film.
Yeah, very briefly, but
very brief, and it was nice just to see him again. Yeah. Just there, same sort of character as Whiplash, same
although
suit.
Although he said he didn't like jazz, though, in this one, didn't he?
Oh, yeah,
good last point. Film, obsessed.
Not else. Really, anyone else to really talk about in the film?
I think, can I talk about the ending?
Because, yes, of course.
Because what I kind of respect Damien Chazelle for doing this, because it's very easy for a film that has so much colour and so much happiness and so much vividness, it's so easy to go the happy ending route. This film
Disney.
This film does not have a happy ending, to the point where I was sat in the middle, Ben to the right and me, Mark to the left, and I'm expecting Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone to get together, that Mia and Sebastian are going to have that happy ending. They're going to fall in love. They're going to make beautiful kids and ride off into the sunset. We jump 5 years later where Mia is a successful actress and we see Sebastian is running his own club. but Mia is married to another guy. She's got a child with him. And I think I out loud went, oh no. Because I was devastated that this perfect couple who couldn't work their differences out are no longer together. And as soon as I saw them sit down at the club and then she locks eyes with him, I had the biggest lump in my throat and then I started...
Admit it, you cried like a baby. It's fine.
If a
film
bitch.
Can do that, that's fine.
Yeah, I did. And that's the first time I've actually cried watching a film with you guys as well.
Yeah, never again. Yeah. So you're out after that. I read it slightly different to you because you said that they were unable to work out their differences. I don't think that's what it was. I thought it was just a case of proximity. So she won this big part that would mean she'd have to go to Paris for like 7 months. And then he decided he was going to, you know, continue touring with the band for a bit and then he was going to follow his dream of creating a club. So she was going to be in Paris. He was going to be in LA. I think it was kind of a fact of... they loved each other very much, but they realised they just weren't going to be around. They weren't going to be near each other, so they decided to part amicably. I don't think it was that they couldn't overcome their differences, per se. But yeah, it was interesting that they didn't go down the happy ending route. But I thought the way... I can't tell whether it was a really clever directorial quirk or if it was cheating. So at the end of the film, you see Mia go into the club that Sebastian now owns. And they lock eyes for the first time in what we assume to be five years. Yeah, we assume they've not seen each other in that period. And then what we then see is kind of what would have happened if they had stayed together. So it's a montage, a very brief, maybe 5 minutes long, and it's very cool and it's beautifully put together, this montage, of what would have happened if they had stayed together, they'd have had kids, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it, as great as it was and as good looking as it was, I kind of felt like it was Chazelle having his cake and eating it. He was saying, I'm not going to give you the Hollywood happy ending, this is what happened, but also here's a little sneak peek at the Hollywood ending so that you don't go away too sad.
But I think it was quite a realistic ending as well, because it happens, you know, not...
The ending was different for me. I expected Jim Bowen to come up and go, look what you could have won.
take it back, boys.
That's what you could have won. Very true though, Ben, because they actually show the original scene with the new husband, the husband now, not new husband, the child and everything, and they kind of reenact scene for scene with Gosling sitting in instead. And it is like, oh, that's when I could see the hay fever kicking in.
There's a massive lump in my throat and it got me. It just absolutely destroyed me. And I just thought the way how it was done was so beautiful as well. It wasn't a cliched Hollywood, what you would normally see on romantic comedies or, you know, or musicals, whatever. This really, it got me in the heart nuts.
And the heart nuts.
The nuts of my heart. Wow. It kicked it.
Well, 2017's weird.
Right?
Just skip to the end. I have no idea what we're talking about anymore. It's this brother's cider.
Oh.
I don't think there's much else to say.
I think the scoring's going to be
the big one.
Yeah, I think we're done here.
Ben.
So the acting was genuinely good. The direction's great. The cinematography, the choreography, all of those things are very good. But the fact that it's a musical puts it at an automatic disadvantage for me. I couldn't enjoy it. I just wanted it to be over. So the best I can give it is 5.
Aww.
Gemma.
I really want to give it 4 marks. I really
what?
Do.
Let's
do it. Go with your gut. Go with your heart balls.
I've not seen a film like this since probably the 60s, the 50s, 60s. So Singing in the Rain kind of era. We have a musical which cannot be replicated in today's age because it's been done. And I bloody loved it. Fuck it. 10 out of 10.
Wow.
Wow.
That's one of the best films I've seen in at least 10 years. Absolutely wonderful. I'm just
crikey.
Enchanted.
That's got to be the biggest gap between two of us that we've had. Even since, I don't think the gap was as big when we saw Deadpool.
No. And I gave Deadpool a 9. I'm going to give it. It's a 9. Definitely.
Wow.
It's that good. I just think you don't make a film like this, and he's ticked every box as an editor, director, producer. Yeah. Everything is so perfect. And I understand the musical element isn't something... I'm not going to go home now and watch Mamma Mia. I just couldn't give shit for it.
No, you shouldn't have to. It's
but
terrible.
It made me enjoy it, and I could see past it. I didn't care for the musical pieces, but it was there, and it was good. Oh, 9 out of 10.
That's fantastic, because 10 plus 9 plus 5 is 24, which is a very easy... Divide that by 3 is 8, so that works out quite nice. So overall, 8 out of 10.
It's time to give some prizes away.
No.
No.
Do it properly.
Come on.
It's... prize giveaway.
No, do it properly.
It's competition.
Do it properly.
It's competition time.
Correct.
That's never going to change. If you listened to our last episode, at the end of the year, we had a big... It wasn't a big stack to give away. That was our Christmas special. We just had lots of prizes to give away. Let's keep it a bit more mature now. So if you'd listened to our last episode, at the end of the year, we had some great prizes to give away, starting with a passengers bundle, which included some sweets, a watch, a really nice, cool watch, a shirt, a flask, loads of stuff. The question I put out there was, Jim Preston in the movie is played by which famous actor? Come on, Gemma.
That's Chris Pratt, isn't it?
It bloody well is. And the winner of that is at KeithZ588 on Twitter. So you'll be getting that bundle. The second prize we had was for a Monster Calls, which I believe you've seen.
Oh, I have indeed.
So people have told me that I need to take a tissue and see that as well.
It's a bit of a
sad one. And
oh God, yeah.
Did you cry in the cinema to that?
Bloody hell. You think earlier on in the La La Land review, like those were just like baby tears. These are like full on big popper tears that I cried at this film. Popper tears.
So the question we put out there for this one was, who plays Grandma? And if you got that right, you were going to win a book, a sketch pad, a bookmark, a shirt. It's absolutely gorgeous, the bookmark, absolutely stunning. The sketch pad and all these pencils and everything. Tell me who it was.
It's Sigourney Weaver.
It was. And do you know what? I'm going to get you one of those because you've been good. So you can have one of those bundles as well.
I have never heard a bookmark referred to as being gorgeous. That is a gorgeous bookmark.
Oh, yeah, because you don't want to lose that one.
That bookmark, gorgeous.
And finally, our good friends at Universal gave us a Sing bundle, which you also saw, didn't you?
I did. I saw the preview of it.
And it had a Varsity jacket. It had loads of stuff. And the winner who left us a great iTunes 5-star review goes to a Black Ledge 88. So you'll be getting one of those. It's 2017. We're not going to do any more comps. That's it now.
We're
giving nothing away. No, we've got some stuff to give away. So our good friends at Dark Bunny, they got in contact after seeing that our Star Wars episode was the most successful episode we did of all last year.
Yeah.
And they said, do you want some kick-ass Rogue One t-shirts to give away?
Big time.
I was like, of course we do. So I'm wearing one right now, guys.
Scariff Beach. Nice. That was pretty good.
They've been really generous. They've given us one girls and one guys one. So we're going to pick two winners. Let's make it really easy. Cassian Andor is played by who in Rogue One?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to tell them, Ben, now?
So they nah.
Can,
that
can we say what it rhymes with?
Also, have you seen the new David Brent film, Life on the Road?
No, yes. I haven't.
Oh, it's really good. But to celebrate, we've got a signed, by Ricky Gervais, hand-signed DVD of the film and the CD soundtrack.
eBay.
Name the group that David Brent is part of in the film. If you don't know that, you know what I mean?
Don't deserve to win.
No. It's a foregone conclusion that someone will get it right, though.
Somebody will get that right. Let us know and you can win that. That's pretty cool, actually.
That's
Ricky Gervais
signed
the video soundtrack.
That's very cool.
And I've said to Universal, we're loving these reviews coming on iTunes. Keep them coming. This time, I'm going to make it really good. I'm going to give 3 bundles away. Just leave us an iTunes review.
5-star.
And we'll read it out if it's really good, like last week. But if it isn't, we'll just mention you and say thank you. And you can win a bundle for 3 people next time.
A lot.
How's that sounding?
Pretty good.
And we'll announce the winners on the next episode in 2 weeks' time.
Movie masturbate time. And we're going to be masturbating, all 3 of us, maybe at the same time.
No, never.
Mutual
never,
masturbation.
Never do it at the same time.
This is just alone in a room.
2017's a bit pervy for Cynthia. I don't like
it. It's because we watch Passengers. I've been heavily influenced and I shall be suing in a few months' time.
Lovely.
But on this segment, we're going to be looking at Al Pacino, the great Al Pacino. Very, very iconic man. And we're going to be talking about our favourite films that he's been in. So because Ben went first on the topics, I want to throw this to you, Mark, for this time.
Normally we have a real, like, little right. How did you find it?
Mm.
I think I can speak for both of you. There's a lot to choose from.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
A hell of a lot.
Yes.
I've gone for a underrated performance that personally is my favourite because no one ever really talks about it. So for me, it's Detective Will Dormer in Insomnia.
Ah.
Wow.
So
I did not see
it
that
was
coming.
Not the
I
big
see that
obvious
coming.
One.
No.
This guy can portray outrage. He's hunting Robin Williams' character. Robbie Williams in this. Robbie?
He's not hunting Robbie Williams. At least I hope not.
He's hunting Robin Williams, the late Robin Williams. And I have never seen someone portray insomnia, being so deprived of sleep so well. Not that there's that much choice to choose from, but he makes me believe that this guy hasn't slept for weeks. The kind of glazed eyes, he just doesn't care. He's kind of always on the edge. You always think he's going to lose his shit. When he's in the station with his other detectives and the other officers, he's always a bit on edge, and you always think, this guy's going to lose it. But it's all sincere to me. I believe this is the character that's going to do it, and I always worry that, what's he going to do? He's so on edge. I feel like he's a risk to have working there. His performance from the start to end mesmerises me, and this film from Christopher Nolan is a masterpiece. I absolutely love everything that Chris Nolan's done, apart from
Interstellar.
But it's so annoying, isn't it, that he kind of fell at that hurdle. Yeah. But, you know, Dunkirk's coming out. But he gets performances out of everyone. We've seen him with Christian Bale. We've seen him with Heath Ledger.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Everyone. I've never seen a bad performance in one of his films from someone that you think, what are they doing?
Mm. Yeah.
I think to be working with the likes of him in this film, he delivers a performance that's up there with everything else, the big classics. And no one really mentions him when they talk about this film, because they talk about how great Robin Williams was.
Yeah, it's a very underrated film, this.
Unbelievably
I
underrated.
See, I dislike the film. We've discussed this in the past. Prior to Interstellar coming out, it was my least favourite Nolan film by a country mile. But you're absolutely right about Pacino. He is fantastic in it. I've no issue with the acting performances. I just found the film kind of boring. But he is very, very good in this. And you're right, he does seem sleep deprived. He does seem on edge. He does seem like a guy who shouldn't be given a badge and a gun.
Mm-hmm. And he does. And look how it ends.
Well, during the film as well, don't you see him sort of almost hallucinate as well? So the screen starts jarring a little bit and you're almost in his head.
Slightly when he's losing his shit. But what a film. For me, I know I'm really looking forward to it. Normally I can predict what you guys are going to say. I have no idea. So Ben. Mm.
I've gone for an underrated one as well. I've gone for him as Lefty Ruggiero in Donnie Brasco.
Oh my God, yes!
It's an absolutely magnificent film. It's one that when people think of Donnie Brasco, they instantly think of it being Johnny Depp's film, and it is. He is the title character. But it's a two-hander for me. Pacino gives as much, if not more, than Depp in this film. They're both fantastic, but it's Pacino's film for me. The thing I love about it is, historically, in the 70s and 80s, Al Pacino was a very subtle actor. Al Pacino could convey as much with his eyes as he could with his words. Then at some point in the 90s, he binned that off and just started shouting. He just started going, that, you know, and just stopped actually acting. So now it's a miracle when he puts in a performance where he actually allows a bit of subtlety to come into it. And this is one of his latter day films where he does that. The role of Lefty, he is a mob hitman in the Bonanno crime family in New York in the 70s. But instead of being kind of the swaggering made man, he's kind of the guy who's never quite moved his way up. You know, he's the guy he's the button man. He's the guy they get to kill the guys, but he never quite get given the responsibility and the extra money that comes with it. He sits around his house wearing really tacky 70s tracksuits. He just looks disheveled. We're used to seeing Pacino as the top guy. He's either a hard-nosed cop or the boss of the criminals. So to see him as this mid-level guy who's never really achieved anything, it's a different look for him, and it was so brilliant what he brought to it, and then the way he mentors Johnny Depp's character, Donnie Brasco, through it. It's a fantastic performance. And when I mentioned the subtlety there, it really comes into play in the last couple of scenes when he starts to realise that Donnie may actually be an FBI agent and that he's been feeding the FBI information. The final scene that you see with Pacino, when he's been called for by his bosses in the mob, and he basically says to his wife, if Donnie calls, tell him, if it had to be anyone, I'm glad it was him. You know, he knows that this meeting he's been called in for is him about to get whacked. He knows this. And he takes off his watch and takes his money clip out of his pocket, puts it in a little box for his wife, just sort of has one last look at the room and then walks out, and it's heartbreaking. Even though this is a mob murderer, this is a guy who proudly boasts that he's whacked 26 people. You can't help but feel sorry for him, and it's all about that subtle performance from the great Al Pacino.
Why can't I sum up things like that?
I know.
He's got glazed eyes, he looks tired, he does it well.
I've got no hope.
The point I took from that, out of all of it, which is one of the things that I didn't think about, is I always see Pacino in a suit in every film, and you just summed it up perfectly. He's I don't think there's many films he's not.
Yeah.
And to see him in his like tracksuit and his joggers and his kind of it doesn't seem right.
Yeah. Because he's a very small man. I think he's about 5'4". But usually, because he's the boss and he's bold, he always seems a lot bigger than he is. Yeah. But in this film, he seems like a little old man, because that's the character he's choosing to portray, a mid-level guy who's never quite hit the big time. Mm. It's a brilliant performance.
It is.
Full of subtlety.
And I haven't seen that film for a good three or four years.
Go watch it again. Me too. It's so good.
That's what I do like about this feature. I watched Insomnia today. And, you know, just to kind of reconfirm my choice, it was that or Jack and Jill. And, you know, it was a difficult one for me. It was, do I go for the Dunkachino or do I not? And it was in the end, Insomnia. But this is what I'm really loving about this feature.
Well, for my choice, I've not gone for the obvious.
Good.
I've not gone for the obvious at all. And I've gone for a film that, in my head, I kind of want to reserve maybe for a future rewatch. So my choice is Sunny from Dog Day Afternoon.
Great film.
I mean,
Attica.
We know that Al Pacino is a method actor, so we know that when he does play parts, he really goes sort of balls to the wall. And this was just after he finished The Godfather, I believe. He originally turned this film down, but until he found out that I think it's Dustin Hoffman was going to get this character, he then decided he wanted it, as we all do with our worst enemies. But basically, Sonny is a chancer, really. Him and his mate Sal rob a bank to steal some money, and it was only supposed to take 10 minutes. It ends up being this great big media circus where the police are involved. He's got spectators sort of cheering him on from the sidelines. Some are booing him. And it's almost like Sonny becomes an anti-hero. But as the film unravels, we see that he's actually trying to steal money for his lover, who is a transsexual who's starting to transition into a woman. And what I love about him in this film, again, you said about his eyes, you see his character through his eyes, and apparently he only had about an hour, 2 hours sleep during the whole shoot of this film. So he's very disheveled all throughout the film and always looks like he's under the most stress anybody could ever be under. But it works so wonderfully with this character as well. And you shouldn't have a sympathy for a robber. You shouldn't have sympathy for someone who's willing to put people in danger. But not only you as a viewer, but the hostages as well start to have a bit of a rapport with him. You kind of want to see him break through on the other side. But unfortunately, as with great plans involving robbing money, they never go to plan.
It's a great performance and one of my favourite of his. And it was very close to being my pick. And I love the interplay between him and John Cazale.
Oh, God, it's great.
They're so good together.
Can you pick that as a future rewatch? Because, again, it's been years.
Yeah. Really has.
Absolute classic. Yeah. I remember watching it for the very first time at uni. And it was one of those films that instantly, like we just said with La La Land, I want to watch it again.
Yep.
I want to watch it now.
Yeah.
Just wow.
And it's a film that, as well, I mean, we talk about over-the-top actions and with this as well, there's such a beautiful subtlety to Pacino in this film as well. But even when he is on edge and he's about to crack and, you know, things are going to tumble down, he doesn't go too over the top like some actors may do when they have bees on their heads and, you know, cough, cough, Nicolas Cage. But it's just an absolute joy to watch this film, and it's a joy to watch him play this character as well.
Absolutely.
Do you want to hear the social media one?
Yeah.
Gerard Carney has said, and this is definitely going to be a future rewatch, Heat.
Oh!
Yeah.
Philip Hand, Any Given Sunday.
Not bad.
That's a
great
okay.
film. I like that film a lot. Yeah, it's really good. Mm. Wayne Saunders agrees with you. Good old Dog Day Afternoon. Kay Ofen has said Scarface. Now, that's what I thought. I was thinking, is Ben or...
I thought one of us were going to have...
It's too obvious.
Yeah.
And finally, Tim Crow has said Carlito's Way.
Oh, yeah. Great film.
What classics there.
I want to throw out Serpico as well.
Yes.
So good in Serpico.
That freak out with the chair as well when he just busts it
open.
There's so many good ones.
There really is.
And Godfather, that little small one
as well. That little thing he did there.
Yeah. Under the radar.
I've got the Twitch. I've talked about it in 2016. I've got it again. I'm in the mood for masturbating again next time. So
it is my turn to pick from the Chalice of Charity.
Nice.
Here we go. Oh, fucking.
Oh, that is that meant to be? It just fell out, that one.
That one just fell out. Oh, I should have kept it, shouldn't I?
Yeah. It chose you.
It chose me, but no, this is the one I've chosen.
So.
Do you want a drum roll?
Yeah, go on. The next person we're going to be masturbating over. Oh, thank Christ. This is going to be good. Nicolas Cage.
It's now time for the first rewatch of 2017. So I've gone with quite a big choice, I think. It's the classic from 2001, Donnie Darko. Yep. Am I allowed to say classic? Is that
yes, you can.
Is.
To sum up the film, good luck to myself, it's about a troubled teenager named Donnie Darko. He escapes death when a jet lands in the roof of his bedroom. And let's be honest about it, that would kill you instantly. Luckily, due to a giant bunny called Frank, he avoids this death and leaves the house just in time, which is great.
Phew.
The bunny then tells me he only has 28 days left to live. Which is just mind blowing. The film then tells. Why are you laughing, Gemma? Sorry. Is it the that would have killed you instantly?
Like, close call.
As the final days come closer and the 28 days count down, we see a series of events that make us basically question Donnie's insanity or sanity. Do you agree with that?
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much the film, because I don't want to try and get in all the time elements.
There's time travel involved and everything. All that. Yeah, I wouldn't have done a good job trying to introduce this, because it's a bloody hard film.
Really bloody hard.
And just think, right, put yourself outside of us for the minute. Imagine you'd never seen this film and had just heard your introduction, which was perfectly good.
You'd be
thinking, how can that film exist? That is whacked. How can such a film exist in the world?
Yeah.
I'm going to change things a little bit here. I've made a little note on my document here. This is a little insider here. Ben's got a nice little iPad here with all his notes on. Indeed. Gemma's got like a Samsung iPad, whatever it's called.
Yeah. Apple iPad, yes. Samsung.
I sit here with paper. I'm still in the 80s with handwritten paper on here. My notes say, I want to question you both. So Ben, I'm going to ask you first and then Gemma.
Okay.
I want you to tell me your first ever experience of Donnie Darko.
Oh,
not
okay.
Now how it was the second time you saw it, or the third. Mm-hmm. Tell me what it was like the very first. And try and remember when it was, because...
I can do this entirely, because it came out when I was at university. And I was at university in Sheffield. And my girlfriend at the time, she came up to see me the weekend that it came out. And Sheffield's a fairly big city. I think it's the fifth biggest city by population in the country. But only one cinema in the entire, pretty much county, anywhere in South Yorkshire, was showing it. And we managed to find the one place that was showing it. And the cinema was damn near empty. It was my girlfriend and I and about eight other people. And again, even in 2001, which doesn't seem that long ago, it was a time when there wasn't so much with YouTube and the trailers and the magazines, all that sort of stuff. You didn't know so much about films. So I had a vague inkling of what this film was about, and I'd seen what Frank the evil bunny looked like. So I was interested. My interest had been piqued, but I knew very little. And my then girlfriend and I went to see this film in this cinema in Sheffield, and I was... It's so hard to describe how I felt, but it kind of changed my thinking. I'm probably going to oversell this, but it just blew my mind. I was like, I've literally never seen anything like this before. At the time, I remember thinking, the closest thing to this is probably Twin Peaks, just in terms of pure weirdness.
I get you.
It was the closest thing I was aware of that was anything like this. And I was just... bowing at the altar there of Donnie Darko at that point. I knew this thing was a masterpiece. It then, of course, died on its arse at the cinema, made no money. Thankfully, it lived on in later life through DVD sales, but it just blew my mind. And still
then,
does, still
then,
does.
Then Ben went home, got on Google, and read every theory and every forum back then. The forums were popular back then.
Oh, big time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gemma?
So I watched this in a very small cinema, two at university, where it was in Leicester. I think it was the Phoenix Cinema, a little, very tiny little place that did a lot of art films and films that weren't really released sort of in the mainstream cinemas. Now, I don't remember this being in any of the big multiplexes. So I went to watch this with my friends, only knowing probably just a plot summary. I didn't really do a lot of reading into this. All I knew is that Jake Gyllenhaal was in it and he looked kind of hot in it. So on that basis,
sold.
I went to the cinema to see it. I felt like I'd never seen anything like it before as well. I couldn't get over just how excited I was watching it, because everything that I thought I'd known about film, this completely changed everything for me in terms of the use of music, the use of two real-life siblings working together. The whole fact that when you think you know what the story is about the last quarter of the film completely turns it on its head, and then it's left to you to decide what this film is all about. And I bloody love that. I love the fact that it gave you a choice of thinking, go on, you make heads or tails of it. What do you think it's about? No film has ever challenged me in the way that Donnie Darko has. And to this day as well, it is a film that I'm so happy to be watching again and again, noticing little things that maybe I haven't watched or noticed before, but of course revisiting the great characters of Kitty, of Jim, of Pomeroy, Monotov, but more importantly, Donnie himself. Classic.
Now, I want to know your thoughts. I want to know your experience with it, Mark, but before I do, I just need to say that sometimes I doubt your commitment to Sparkle Motion.
I didn't see this at the cinema. So back in the day at university, I was going out with this girl and her brother was a really good movie buff and he used to give me lists of films to watch. And he said, there's a film that's been made that's been on a shelf in America for 2 years that they can't get the funding or the distribution for. Drew Barrymore's in it and because Jake Gyllenhaal wasn't a big name then.
No.
And she's self-funding to get it out. And I was like, this is interesting. But it's available on Movie Time as a Region 1 DVD. And I was like, right, okay. So I got all my mates around. I think Rich, who you've heard on the Star Wars episode about just over a year ago, we all got in and we ordered this and put £2 or £3 in. We put it on and I didn't understand what the hell was going on. I didn't. And I wasn't on drugs or anything like that. I was going to
say,
there.
What's your cigarette spike?
No, nothing like that. I was watching it thinking this is... Like you both said, I've never seen anything like this. And the first time we see that light beam across the kind of phase across the screen, I literally thought the TV was playing up. I was like, I've never seen it. It's like the first time you see bullet time on a film in The Matrix. It was that, what is going on here? I instantly said to the guys, do any of you understand what's going on? And every single person took something different from it and no one was right or wrong.
Yeah.
You said, there's not a film that's questioned you like this. There never will be, I don't believe, again.
The very first film that's ever made me.
And you won't again.
And I presume this is why you insisted on us watching the theatrical cut rather than the director's cut, because the director's cut tries to clarify things unnecessarily. It removes that integral part of it that is you being open-ended with it, allowing yourself to question why these things are happening. What was it, Richard Kelly, was it?
Yes.
Kelly. He tried too hard with the director's cut to say, this is what this means. I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. I like being able to debate it. And as you say, go on the forums and read people's crazy theories and look out for Easter eggs.
There was actually, once the DVD was out, they updated the website and you could literally go in and explore all these different tangents and find out a lot more. So Roberta Sparrow's book, if you work out a particular puzzle, it leads you to another part of the website. And again, I think that was probably one of the first, well, bar probably Blair Witch, but that was probably one of the most interactive uses of finding out for yourself. Again, there was no right or wrong way to look into things. Incredible.
Yeah. And I miss that a little bit, because it is now to the point where we have films that have to tell you everything. And when have we ever done a rewatch and not gone for the director's cut?
Mm-hmm.
Never.
Yeah, first time.
We're always going, right, let's do it. And I was strict. I was like, I don't like the director's cut.
And the funny thing is, when you were very specific about that, because I hadn't watched it in a few years, admittedly, I was kind of like, why has he been such a dick about it?
that's fair.
So I watched the theatrical cut, and then I went on YouTube and I watched all the deleted scenes, which basically in the director's cut, Richard Kelly just put them back in and changed a couple of the songs. So I watched them and I was thinking, none of this is necessary. It's over exposition and a lot of the scenes are just pointless. So I get it. The sort of sub 2 hour version is so much better than the 2 hour 10 minute one.
Mm-hmm. Was it, and I might be wrong, was it Jake's first major film?
I think it was. It was certainly the first thing I ever saw him in.
What a debut.
Yeah. He's phenomenal in this. Every time he goes into one of his kind of psychotic trances. So, he's a kid who is in therapy, and his therapist says that he might be a paranoid schizophrenic, and he's on pills. And every time he goes into one of these trances where he's seeing Frank the Giant Bunny, one of the things we've not mentioned, actually, we've said Giant Bunny about 50 times, it's a man in a bunny suit.
Yeah.
It's not Roger Rabbit or anything like that, you know. Every time he sees this Frank character, and he kind of, his jaw drops to the point, you know, his head sort of angles downwards, a smirk appears across his lips, and then he looks upwards towards Frank, and it's really quite powerful, and he doesn't blink, which seems to be one of the go-to things for him.
It's a Gyllenhaal smash! It
is one of the main clubs in his bag, I think, just the whole not blinking thing, and it works for him. And he just looks so otherworldly, and that little smirk on his face, he's brilliant. And I remember watching it thinking, who is this kid? And he wasn't a kid, he was 21 or something when he made it.
He was born to play this role, when everything falls into place.
The thing is, when I've been looking for pictures for this on Twitter and stuff to tell people, that's the most iconic image you see, his face at that angle, like you said. And it's even got that kind of, it reminds me of someone like the Joker. He's just insane, and there's no actual expression in his eyes. Mm. His eyes need an Oscar. heads.
Him and Emma Stone's eyes between them.
But yeah, he captures a teen angst that I don't think is often captured in... I wouldn't even call this really a teen film. It's a sci-fi kind of time travel film. Mm-hmm. But then again, that's just maybe my opinion. There's no labelling this film. And the fact that he has this kind of angst, it's wise beyond his years. You see this kind of performance, maybe an actor who's 20 years into the game, not somebody who's certainly making this almost his breakthrough role.
Yeah. One of the things you mentioned earlier, Gemma, was it was nice to see the chemistry between the real-life siblings. So his sister in the film is played by his real sister, Maggie Gyllenhaal, and it is brilliant. There are a couple of scenes with them bantering with each other over the dinner table.
So you could go suck a fuck.
You can go suck a fuck. How would one suck a fuck?
I love the parents. Will you stop this?
Yeah.
Well, the mum is. The dad's just laughing. Yeah. He loves it.
What's a fuck ass?
Isn't it strange that she's gone and done Dark Knight and stuff like that, but we just don't really see much of her in the last few years? I've not seen major performances.
The two of them tend to do more indies than they do blockbusters. Yeah. He's got a few blockbusters under his belt. He did god-awful things like Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
But she tends to keep it on the lower level, but she's a fantastic actress. One of the best there is.
Have you seen Secretary?
Oh, my God, yes.
With Robert California.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely that unbelievable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So in the version that we've seen, so Donnie has these 28 days. He's told by Frank the Bunny that the world's going to end. He then meets this girl, Gretchen, who he falls in love with. She ends up then being killed in a hit and run by the guy in the Frank Bunny suit. Mm-hmm. Donnie then shoots Frank in the eye. Donnie then appears back in his bed 28 days before the jet engine falls through and kills him. And it's kind of this whole thing of, you know, what does any of this mean? And as we've already said, it's open to interpretation. Have you then gone and read the forums and the websites and so on and found out what it's supposed to mean? The big theory that has been put forward by Kelly Mee. Have you read all this shit?
I'll be honest, I haven't, because I don't want to.
Oh.
Let
me tell you.
I've purposely not gone on the websites or ever read it, because I knew back then a rabbit came to my house and said, in 17 years' time, Ben is going to tell you on an episode of Skip to the End exactly the right theory. So I've waited 17 years for this. So you're not... Sorry, you're too new to having demands like that. Fire away, Ben.
So I'm going to tell you what the supposed meaning of this is. But forget it. Discount it. It's all that matters is what we actually saw in the theatrical cut. That's all that matters. Everything is just a theory. But what is supposed to have happened is, initially, Donnie and his family and whatnot are in the primary universe. A vortex appears above his house, and a plane that is elsewhere in a different dimension, the engine falls off and goes through this vortex and avoids Donnie in what is now a tangent universe. Tangent universes appear every now and again and only last for 28 days, at which point they then fold in on themselves. If they fold in on themselves with something that shouldn't be in it, it will then end the world, including the primary universe. The jet engine, because it's from the primary universe, shouldn't be in the tangent universe. There will already be that version of the jet engine in the tangent universe. Therefore, there are two things in there. One of them shouldn't be there.
Nice.
So what Donnie has to do is return the second engine back to the primary universe so that when it collapses in on itself, the whole world doesn't collapse.
Yeah. I feel like I'm about to go cross-eyed.
Yeah, and apparently this is what that book, this Grandma Death, her philosophy of time travel that Donnie gets a copy of, that's what it tells you in this book. And the theory is that she's been through this same thing before. She was the primary person who had to contend with this. And now it's his turn to do it. And it's all well and good from an academic perspective. Like, I sat and read a couple of websites last night in preparation for this, reading about all that, and I'm thinking, that's really interesting. I like that. That's kind of cool as background knowledge. Yeah. But I like the fact that that's not canon. That's not the official theory. It's fun having a discussion about it and how wacky and weird and out there it is. I bloody love hard sci-fi, don't get me wrong. But I love the fact that they didn't make that the primary. Even in the director's cut, that's not bang obvious. You need to go away and read the excerpts from this book that Kelly had written. I like the fact that that's just one potential thing you can enjoy and have a laugh or a thought about, but it's not the real deal. The real deal is it's whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
It's just a weird-ass film.
I think that can also be a negative, because I've seen a lot of tweets coming from this week saying, we're watching Donnie Darko, let us know your thoughts. Some people are like, biggest pile of shit I've ever seen. What a waste of time. Didn't understand a word. And if you're not a massive movie buff, you're probably not going to spend the time going to do the research. You'll just watch the film and go, oh, that was shit, and turn it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's quite a shame, because hopefully some people will listen now and get a bit more of an idea. But there is the fact that this book exists with the extra time travel stuff. It's like watching Lost, when Lost was on telly, and we'd each week go in and have another theory. What's going on? Why is the... island move? Why is Locke dead? What's going on here and all this? And it's everyone had their own theories, and there was websites set up then, and the time hatchet and all this. And there was a lost book you could read to find out why they were down there and all this. And I miss that.
Yeah.
I want more like that. I want to be having to go out and do a bit more to try and get my own concept on it.
And we've said that we've said this on previous podcasts, that Westworld has been a bit like that.
Yeah.
It's one of those where you can go and read theories and get invested in it outside of the show itself. And
that's
it,
a really good point, yeah.
There isn't much like that these days, and Lost was the biggest one.
What are you about to say there? I can see you ready to jump. Is that ruining it for you, or you?
No, actually, you know what? It's a cool theory, and I quite like that. It's not too overcomplicated. But yeah, just hearing it all in one go, and it's like, I need to lie down for a
minute. You want to watch it again now,
I
knowing
do.
That.
I need to now, yeah. But it's so difficult to not ignore some of the key players in this film as well. As obviously Jake Gyllenhaal is Donnie Darko. Mm. He will always be remembered for Donnie Darko, and rightfully so. But to have the balls to cast Patrick Swayze in this film, he's been known throughout his career as a hero, as the lady's choice of a dreamboat for a romance. And yet we see him as this motivational speaker hiding a very deliciously dark secret, the fact that he's a paedophile.
Yeah,
I was about to say kiddie fiddler.
Kiddie porn dungeon is the word.
I'm thinking of starting a band, and you're both welcome to join, called Patrick Swayze's Kiddie Porn Dungeon. Thoughts?
Headlining every festival next summer.
But... Mike, I mean,
it's a brave move, and I'm surprised he agreed to do it, because obviously he wouldn't have been paid a lot.
No.
But it was a genius bit of casting as well. Genius bit of casting. And he hides that facade so well throughout the film. One of the highlights of the film for me as well is the head over heel scene, where we kind of, it's almost like a little sort of recap as to what's going on outside of home life for Donnie, obviously with school life, but we get an introduction to so many of the key characters. So Jim Cunningham, the amazing Kitty Farmer.
I love Kitty.
Oh, I do love her so much. One of the best lines as well for her. He told me to forcibly insert the Lifeline exercise card into my anus.
That was a great impression of Beth Grant. You nailed it there.
Oh, thank
and
you.
Again, it's where the mum is looking stern-faced, but the dad is just chuckling. Yeah. He loves it.
That whole scene as well, not just Kitty, but we meet the bullies of Donnie Darko, we meet Sparkle Motion. Oh. But again, it's just, you don't know the full story in that scene, especially with Jim Cunningham as well. He's so charming. He has this lovely face about him. He's a very trusting character. And yet he does these despicable things until it's revealed by Donnie Darko. Donnie was meant to uncover this horrific secret that he has.
You just mentioned Head Over Heels there.
I did.
This soundtrack, from start to finish, is... I think we never mentioned it in our top soundtracks when we first started this podcast. And it's those things... I remember you mentioned this film for top time travel films.
Yes, I did.
But we did miss out. And this would make my list now.
Me too.
If we revisited. Oh, yeah. The soundtrack has not got one bad track on. It's not, no skip. It's even got Pantera on there, on the extended one. But it's just the best 80s sounds, songs, everything. And it just works so well. La La Land, we've talked about today, having a great soundtrack. And this, it is...
Yeah.
It adds so much.
It's almost like it's not like Hot Tub Time Machine 80s. This is subtle 80s.
Yeah, it's not the cheesy 80s. It's like deep cuts, not the cheesy, obvious synthy shit. It's, you know, I love a director, and this is one of the things that Tarantino is known for. I love a director who is like a curator of the music of the film. It's not just let's pick the most 80s sounding things. Let's pick the songs that are brilliant and fit this era and create that atmosphere. It's beautifully created by curated this by Richard Kelly.
I call that doing a Cameron Crowe.
Yes,
right. there's no one else better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ever.
The only negative I can think of with this film is Drew Barrymore. As you say, she's in this, and also she financed it. Her company produced it. She's shit in this. See, I've never rated her as an actress, frankly. I don't think anything
she's
of
good
her.
In E.T.
I'm sure, sure that's true. Oh, was she in Mac and Me? No. But she's god-awful in this. And the character doesn't really need to exist. It's a pointless character, and she just seems like she's not even trying.
She probably isn't. She's sitting there thinking, oh my, I'm losing so much money right now.
It's like, I've got other things to think about right now.
I like Noah Wyle as the other teacher. I think he does a good
Molotov,
job.
But
she, but she does. She brings nothing to it other than a bit of pretension. I wish they'd just cut her out.
Are you grateful
entirely?
She's only in it for about 15 minutes?
But even then it pisses me off. It's like, oh, her again. You know, whereas everyone else is like Jenna Malone in it as Donnie's girlfriend, Gretchen. She's fantastic. She has I love her face. She just has an utterly unique look about her, and I could just look at her all day. She's a really good actress as well. I really, you know, we've talked about Sucker Punch before, which I think is a better film than people give it credit for, and that's one of the reasons I love her in that. And she's really good in this. It was the first thing I ever saw her in.
Mm, and she's, because her character's gone through so much with her mother surviving a stabbing incident as well, mm-hmm. and you see that haunting kind of look about her. You know she's been through the mill. She's been through so much trauma.
Yeah.
Like, she can't possibly go through anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Does it still blow your mind at this moment in time that this is the director's debut? And since, he's done nothing good.
See, I like Southland Tales. I know objectively Southland Tales is not a good film. I'm not a moron. But I enjoy it because it's fun and because The Rock's in it and because it's aggressively weird.
And have you seen The Box with Cameron Diaz?
Yeah, and it's,
oh, yes.
And it's piss poor. And
that's not
and
good.
It's kind of a shame that his career's gone down the pan because I think he's a guy with an incredibly active imagination, and Christ knows Hollywood needs that because there's so much stale old shit going on in Hollywood. We just need people who are out, whose minds are that way out.
Yeah.
We need those people. We need true artists, creative types.
But it's his debut. It doesn't... Have either of you seen S Darko? Because I've never seen
nope.
it.
New. Shouldn't
nope.
have to.
Nope. What? And that's the end of is, that.
Yeah. Moving on.
Is there anyone involved in it that's...
Davy Chase, who plays Samantha Darko in the original, plays... Mm-hmm. Samantha in the remake. Kelly had nothing to do with it.
Did anyone else? Is
no.
that it?
Yeah.
Nope.
I will never watch that.
No, should we veto that one?
It's up there with, have you ever seen the American Psycho sequel? With, I think Mila Kunis stars in it.
No.
She's someone who was, she was Bateman's only victim that got away. And then
right.
she becomes a murderer as
oh,
well.
Christ.
It's ridiculous. Nah. Cash in nonsense.
I'm ready to rate this beauty if you guys are.
Yeah. yeah. Big time.
Right. I'm going to go first as it's my choice.
Yeah.
It's a 9, mm-hmm. which is very high, and I'm going to steal what Ben said. If Drew Barrymore wasn't in this and the director's cut didn't exist and got so forced on us sometimes where it's a bit like, just don't make the... Just leave it. Just let it be itself. It would have probably been a 10.
Yeah.
But 9's... We're acting like 9's a failure. 9 is still bloody good.
Yeah.
It's a 9 for me as well. It is a timeless film. It's a film where you can really make your own mind up. But it's still good. 9's not a bad thing.
It's a 9 for me as well. And it's the highest possible 9 I could give without it being a 10. One of the things I've seen on our Twitter this past week, a lot of people have been talking about this since we've said we were going to watch it, have said that it doesn't hold up. They saw it as teenagers and it didn't hold up. I couldn't disagree more. I love it as much now as I did when I first saw it. That first time I saw it in a little cinema in Sheffield in 2001, it blew my little mind. It still does. Mm-hmm. 9 out of 10.
So Donnie Darko gets a skip to the end. 9 out of 10. I think it's Gemma's turn
it
now.
Is. I'm excited. Really
is.
I'm excited.
Don't break the streak because we've been on a bloody good run.
How can I not? We're having such a good time talking about these classic films. So I'm going to throw in another one in a pot for you on the next rewatch. We're going to be watching One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, nice.
And I know it's a big favourite of yours.
Oh, right, it's in the top 5.
I've Lovely. Never seen it either.
Me neither.
Brilliant.
Stick around.
It's time for round 2 of probably the greatest game show since the last one, Cast and Furious. Now, I've seen a few tweets this week and people saying, well done, Mark, as if like I'm this special person that suddenly got to do something that I shouldn't have done.
Mark,
but
you are a special
person. Yeah. Very true. I'm very special.
Yeah.
What I really liked was they hadn't seen a thrashing like that since Passion of the Christ. Because 11-4, that was from my other account. That was from myself. But it was one hell of a whipping on the last episode. 11-4 isn't even close. Like, let's be honest, right. That was annihilation.
Battered.
So,
I'm still in the room, guys.
Yes, but you can still get, you know, back in the game. If you win today, it's all to play for next time.
I could do, or I could lose horrifically and get a double thrashing.
It's such a difficult one to kind of grasp because it is all about, do you just go for it and risk it for a biscuit,
yeah.
or it is,
I don't know. It's tough.
Let's just see how it goes. If you didn't listen to the last episode, please do, because that's a very momentous occasion for me winning an actual game show. The only other one I ever was about, I had to lie, and I won that one. So that's
a pathological lie. Shocker. Yeah.
The game is quite simple. So I will be revealing different cast members from a certain film. There will be five names I read out. As I read out another name, it's down to, on this occasion, Ben or Gemma to shout out the film they believe is the one I'm talking about. Really simple concept. As I go down the list, it's going to get easier because I'll be revealing more names and it'll be making it a bit more obvious. Am I boring you, Gemma, sitting there yawning?
Yawning. Better things to do, apparently.
If it's either that or do that, you know, that yawn when you close your mouth and you end up just doing like a really long face, like...
Yes, but, you know, it just makes me think I'm boring you. But anyway, let's see how the game show goes now, shall we? If I'm boring
you. Can she get a minus point for that?
Minus
'cause that's
five.
Bad attitude.
Oh, my God.
So let's start. I was just about to go, let's start and read out the film. I also saw a tweet this week where it said Ben's soothing tones as he reads out the names was music pleasure to their ears.
I don't know what they're referring to.
So I'm going to try and replicate it in the best that I can. Even though I sound a bit weird.
Don't be biting on my style, boy. So get your own style.
So the first name, Johnny Depp.
You had your eyes closed.
Definitely sounds like a sex pest.
Any wild guesses from Johnny Depp?
Nah,
doesn't really
leave. I'll leave it there. We get less points if we guess, don't we?
Yes, sorry, as we go along.
Yeah.
The next name, which will mean it's worth 4 points, Helena Bonham Carter. Botham, whatever her name is.
Ian Botham's in this.
Would you like to take a guess at this? Two names.
No.
They're not very, they don't work together a lot.
No, thank you. Let's get the next one.
God. This is one I think one of you's going to bite.
All right.
Anne Hathaway.
Yes, I would like to. Oh, shit.
Remember, if you're going to shout, you need it ready.
Yeah, I know. I just thought I'd be really selfish because that's what I do.
3 points this will be worth.
Yes, yeah, I do, yeah. Is it Alice in Wonderland?
Correct.
Yeah!
Well done.
You played that quite nice, not too much scream, I like that.
No, it's because I remember to step away from the mic.
Film choice
How many points
two?
Was that, sorry?
That's
three points.
Yeah.
I should be writing this down.
You should, yeah.
The second film, Carrie Fisher. Any wild guesses, guys?
New.
The second one for 4 points, Mark Hamill.
So that's one of four films.
I wonder what the third one could be.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
I think so.
Will Ferrell.
Oh.
Oh, shit.
I'm going to give it a go. Is it Jane's Silent Bob Strikes Back?
She's got it.
Yay!
Oh, no, I quit. I'm out.
Oh, my God.
I give up.
That's
garbage.
Crazy.
Wow.
Sick of this.
Where did that come from? I thought you were going to say Harrison Ford, so sorry about that.
Right then. God. Come on, Ben.
No.
The third one, Christian Bale.
The Machinist.
Are you actually going to guess
that?
Incorrect.
Ah, fuck.
The second one. I still think Ben could win this because there's still two after this.
Oh, nice to hear you've got faith in me.
Michael Caine.
Let's get the next one.
For three points.
Scarlett
Johansson.
Okay, I'm going to give it a guess. Is it The Prestige?
It is.
Yes!
Balls, I should have waited. I'd have got that one.
9 points. You could get this, 5 and 4.
So I've got to get both of them, either on the first or second.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Rob Lowe.
No.
Mm-mm.
Meatloaf.
Wayne's World.
Oh,
yes.
Well done.
He's got it.
Right,
so
if I get the next one on 5, I'll win. If I get it on 4,
no,
I draw.
Draw.
Oh,
you'll
shit.
But right. then we'll have a tiebreaker.
Okay, I've got to have a punt then, haven't I?
Just to let you know, it would have been Ed O'Neill, Dana Carvey.
Dana.
And Mike Myers. Well done, Ben. That was a risky one.
Thank you.
This is tense. The first one for 5 points. Michael Parks.
Red State.
Are you sure? Or do you want to withdraw and guess something else?
Well, I can't. I've got Tusk. Sorry, I want to withdraw and say
yes,
Tusk.
Not Tusk. No, are you sure?
Hang on.
No, you're not going to guess, are you?
What the fuck?
I just want to make it go to the tiebreaker.
Oh, my God.
Okay, you're frozen out. Sorry, Ben.
Oh,
you said Red State,
bed.
Didn't you? It's not.
All right, forget
okay.
it.
For 4 points, Lucy Liu.
Next one, please.
Uma Thurman.
Uma Thurman. Sounds like Bernard Manning.
Yes. Oh, whoa. It could be Kill Bill Volume. Because he's in both of those, is Michael Parks.
You've already won, kid. Just guess.
Volume 2.
So it's a final score of 10-3.
Battered.
Not
mullered.
Good at all. Yay. Did you want the tiebreaker?
Yeah, because that's the real quiz. Yeah.
This is for some dignity.
It's the real quiz.
Sigourney Weaver.
No.
Mm-mm.
Bill Murray.
Ooh.
Dan Aykroyd.
It's going to be like a Now You See Me Too kind of instance.
Yeah.
Rick Moranis.
Right, so who's name five? It's going to be Ghostbusters 1 or 2. Who's it going to be? On.
Peter McNichol.
Ghostbusters 2.
Yes, he wins.
No.
That was the real quiz. That was the real quiz. So that's Blockbusters.
Every fucking time.
He's phone shoes
language.
Well done, Gemma, to be fair.
Yay. Yes, good win, good victory.
Long time that Ben's lost.
I know, I'm in shock here.
Some people might assume that I threw the game on purpose for a bit of variety. That's for them to say. I couldn't possibly comment.
On the next episode, then, it will be me versus Ben, and Ben could draw, so then I don't know what we'll do. Rock, paper, scissor?
Big time. Or a tops-off wrestle.
I'm up for either, so stick around for that in 2 weeks' time. We're so close to the end now, but without the listener questions, we wouldn't be skipped to the end, would we, really?
Correct.
So let's fire off with @bash2110. She said that she's been watching Toy Story 3 and it really got her thinking about franchises. She believes out of 1, 2 and 3, there are no flaws, which is a huge statement. Mm-hmm. Is this the only exception out of all franchises, which is a bold statement.
Well, the only perfect trilogy.
Yeah. Well, not just a franchise, you know, because there's only three of them, isn't there? So is it the perfect one? Because let's be honest about it, there's a lot of crap out there. Usually like Matrix, the second and third fall flat on its face. The third one is really hard to get right. So for me, the closest would be Back to the Future. I love one and two. Three's pretty shit, good. But it's the closest you get. You get two unbelievable and third, all right. But there's... I can't think. She might have nailed it with...
I think she's got it there.
If you're talking full franchise, like, if you're talking trilogy, the original trilogy of Star Wars are flawless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then we had the prequels, which are dog shit.
So it ruins the franchise.
Yeah.
Hugely. I think she's done it.
Oh, shit.
She's got
it's the only one I can think of the top of my head.
Mm.
What about Tremors?
Tremors 5 just didn't quite have it for me. Yeah, Fast and Furious, you know.
Do I have any last calls on Police Academy?
Yes.
Mission
that's
to Moscow,
the one.
Masterpiece.
Done. That's going to be a future rewatch.
Yes.
There you go, Bash. 7 films of Police Academy, get it right. They'll ruin it now, won't they, with Toy Story 4? It'll be shit.
Of course it will.
Chris Ducker said, Ben, with your stated love for visual symmetry in the last episode...
Yeah.
He would like to know your thoughts of Hannibal, the TV series.
I bloody love Hannibal, the TV series. I think Mads Mikkelsen, for me, is now the definitive Hannibal. As great as Hopkins was in Silence of the Lambs, and I liked Hopkins in the later films, but it made it a bit too high camp. I loved how fantastic Mikkelsen was, and he owns it. And in terms of the symmetry, the direction of that film is fantastic. Some of the imagery. There's one episode, Mark, you might be able to fill in the blanks on this. Do you remember the one where, I can't remember if it's Hannibal or one of the other serial killers, slices people up into like ham, wafer-thin ham slices and puts them into the glass.
In the glass containers. Yeah. And then you see them from the side angle.
Yeah, that visual is fantastic. And I think it was one of the earlier episodes where someone put like antlers, split someone's body apart and then put these antlers into them.
Outside in the snow and then the body was found with it actually inside them. It's amazing.
Yeah, the visuals on that show are amazing.
That's one I want to, it hasn't been that long. I didn't like Series 3 as much. It tested me a bit.
The stuff in Japan wasn't quite great.
But I really want to just sit and binge watch that again. Mm. Just have you seen it all?
I've only seen the first series.
Whoa.
I know.
Get involved.
Will do. Don't you worry about that.
This is spooky. This guy, I think, I don't know. His name's Rogue Dan, and he's put your favourite ever Nicolas Cage movie.
Oh. Can't answer it, sorry.
That is really weird. Yeah. I will actually Instagram that because no one will believe me.
Well, if you think about it, I think Nicolas Cage has been very, there's been a very clairvoyant element to this episode because I did mention him very briefly as a comparison on MMD for Al Pacino.
Yeah.
So this person's had two questions. It's Jay Lost the Day. Gemma, what has been your favourite moment of joining Skip to the End as a full-time member?
Oh my goodness.
But as in a favourite moment on the episode, so not just like, oh, well, when I was outside, I got recognised once. What's been your favourite moment?
Oh, I had so much fun when we discussed Apocalypse Now. I think that's probably one of the best discussions that we've done as us three. I really enjoyed doing that. But I think what trumps it all was our Bad Santa episode. The whole episode. Because I remember a three quarters of that episode and I know nothing about the game show onwards. That was so much fun.
We were a little bit tipsy.
Tiny bit.
Yes. How was it listening back when it actually came out? Were you like, I don't remember this?
I think I was all right up until the, I think just after the game show, and then listening back to listeners' questions. Even, I mean, I've got braces. Sometimes I can't understand what I'm saying, but my God, I couldn't understand a word I was saying on that. I think there was a lot of overpronunciation.
Yes, it was a mess.
You should have had the director's cut. Holy moly.
But that was the one thing where Ben sent over the edits and there was a page of A4, like, don't take this. This has got to come out. You cannot say this. Gemma cannot say that. And it was literally chop, 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 chop. I will send it to you one day.
I'm usually like a Disney princess for my language.
The other question he's actually asked to all of us.
Okay.
If you were caught by an outrageous terrorist organisation, which we hope never happens,
let's hope not.
Which 80s action movie star would come to the rescue?
Oh, shit, come on.
Yeah, I've got two little words for you.
Die Hard.
John McClane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Bruce Willis, too. John McClane, Die Hard.
Snake Plissken.
A good shout.
Yeah, but I mean, with John McClane, you know he's not going to be too heavy on the garments, is he? So you could pretty much go in like a skin suit, like a ninja.
We get a lot of silly questions and some don't make the final cut, but I'm bringing this one. Ben, you'll probably shoot me down, but I want... It's made me think for the last couple of days. So Drunk Comic Fans Pod has said, how come hot dogs come in packs of 10?
Right.
But the buns will always only come in 8. And that is something that made me think. And it's a ridiculous question, but think about it. You'll never out to buy 8 rolls on their own or 8 sausages. It's 10 and 8. So do you stick one in each ear while you eat it?
No, the answer is obvious. The hot dogs last longer than the buns, so you don't need as many buns as dogs. You just buy more buns. The buns will only last 3 or 4 days. The dogs would last years in a tin.
How have I not thought about that? I've been thinking, like, you cook them all in one go, and the buns, like, you have to have them there and then.
For those of you who just tuned in, we are actually a film podcast.
Ken Major 83, your main viewing habits nowadays, cinema, DVDs, Netflix, what is your main go-to source? We have to do the cinema for our new release.
Yeah, we go to approximately, what, 2 films a month, 2, 3 maybe. I'm all about streaming. I'm a modern man. I watch a lot of Netflix. I've signed up for Amazon Prime again. I watch a hell of a lot of shit on Amazon Prime. It's convenient. It's in your house and it's cheap.
I'm definitely, I've got Netflix and Amazon Prime as well, but it's so good knowing that if you want to watch one episode or 101 episodes, it's all there straight away. So, yeah.
I'm a bit of a hoarder. So you've probably seen I've got boxes and bookshelves full of films. I like to own them, but I have cut down a hell of a lot. And it, like you said, Ben, I can't even be asked to go upstairs and get the Blu-ray now. If it's on Netflix, I'll just push play and not bother.
Exactly.
He's also asked, what's your feeling of now all these different cinemas out there doing the unlimited card? So I think you pay £16, £17 a month and you get unlimited.
Yeah, I love them. I think it's absolutely fantastic because it means that you don't necessarily have to save up your money just to see one film if you want to see it for like a week or a month. I think it encourages people to go and watch as many films as possible. So it might be good for the box office, but it's also good for the old peepers there. So
I love that you just said that people save up their money.
I know.
I put 30p aside every day in the hopes of seeing a film in 2 weeks' time.
That's what I really hope for. You having dinner today? Not today, babe. Why? I'm saving up still for one cinema ticket.
We're in a tough time for the economy.
Is your life like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory? You're all in this one bed and you're just saving up for your one cinema outing.
Yeah. And we sing and make choreographs every day.
Yeah, and you got the golden ticket when you joined Skip to the End, love.
Yeah!
What I do like about them, though, is I've noticed they do exclusive screenings. Like, they get films earlier. They do these unknown screens. And I love all that.
Yep. And I've been to quite a number of them, actually. And it's brilliant to know that there's no idea what you're going to watch until the card comes up. And again, it might be a film that you would not necessarily go and see voluntary. It's fantastic. And there's been some great examples of it in recent months. I mean, Manchester by the Sea, which is going to be a big
It's nice how
awards.
Quick they get them,
yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a big awards player this year.
It's going to be a huge Oscar player. Mm,
but films like that, fantastic.
At Flicks Watchers Podcast has said they've got an 11-hour flight coming up next week. What movie would you recommend, sort of tactics? Are there certain types of movies that would be good? What wouldn't work? He wants to know, not specific film titles, but, you know, I mean, I wouldn't watch Final Destination or Lost on that flight. Yeah. Or
Flight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What's that one as well where they eat each other?
Alive.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
I was going to say Cannibal Holocaust, but yeah, Alive's much worse.
I've actually got a bit of a thing I do. I try and not... It's a weird one. When we went to New York, I thought, oh, I'll catch up on all these films, but I try and not watch anything that I really wanted to see because I don't want it to be on a little 6-inch screen.
Yeah.
So if there's like Lord of the Rings, you don't want to experience it for the first time there. But I try and watch those films like Bad Neighbours 2 and stuff like that. I just caught up on the comedies that I wouldn't really pay to see and I wouldn't buy it. It's just kind of like, that'll do. Mm.
The comedy is always the first one I go to.
Yeah.
I have to admit.
I try to hook into a genre, have, you know, a whole flight of one thing. So when I went New York same time as you did, on the way there, I watched Captain America Civil War, Batman versus Superman and Deadpool in a row. And as the third film ended, the tires hit the runway. It was perfectly timed.
Well done. I think I did I went to Canada a few months ago and I think it was things like Keanu, The Wedding Singer even.
Random.
Yeah, like just films that I know that I'm not going to go, nah, shit, I'll just watch something else.
Fair enough. Ryan Abbott has asked, if you could be an apprentice to any filmmaker, who would you choose?
An apprentice.
Apprentice to any filmmaker, who would you choose? I'm going to go straight with Christopher Nolan because he is the absolute master of making films. And I'll be just going, how'd you do this? How'd you do that? What'd you do this? But also Steven Spielberg.
Of course.
I would say John Carpenter, but he seems a bit arsey and I would think he'd be a bit grouchy. And I'd just be like, oh, okay. I just didn't get much of a vibe off him when I met him. He wasn't nice. So Christopher Nolan and Spielberg.
Oh, I think for sheer entertainment value and maybe an eye-opener, probably someone like Lars von Trier.
Oh, why would you bother?
Just to see just how different the other side is, because I can probably imagine him as an absolute dictator. But, I mean, for funsies, probably someone like Quentin Tarantino. Yeah. I think that'd be quite a laugh. Yeah.
I think that would be my obvious answer, Tarantino. But I would love to see what Denis Villeneuve's up to, because he's my guy at the minute. He's the guy that's just knocking it out of the park.
That would be unbelievable. Mm. Final question is Scott Jameson. Can you think of a film that was spoilt for you by one single element? Maybe a cast member, some music, something that just didn't really fit? That's a great question.
Yeah.
Have a think.
Okay. I'm a big fan of the indie films, the smaller films that kind of make a little bit of a ripple. And there's a great film called Adventureland starring Jesse Eisenberg. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, good film.
It's a good film. It'd be a great film if Kirsten Stewart wasn't there. Or Kristen Stewart.
The old slack-jawed yokel. Yeah.
She's so awkward. And it's just like, you know when you get one of those work experience kids come into your work and they're there for like 2 weeks. They don't really know what they're doing. They're just sort of pissing around. And she is the work experience of the acting world.
Yeah. Whenever you see her face, I just think this noise is going to come out of her. Durr, 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 durr. Not actual words.
Is that like Cartman when he's trying to go for the Paralympics? That's amazing.
The funny thing is, it's interesting that you chose that because the one I was thinking of is I have loved David Cronenberg's recent work. Eastern Promises and History of Violence are fantastic. The one that he did about Jung and Freud.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Dangerous Method. That's the one. That's I thought what? That was okay. I didn't love it, but it was okay. But his last two films, Cosmopolis and Maps to the Stars, I haven't watched because they both star Robert Pattinson and I can't stand the man. I just want to punch him square in the fucking nose.
I also imagine, you know, if you were to speak to him, you'd probably go, duh, duh, duh.
Yeah. And those two were a real life couple, weren't they, for a while? Just duh, at each other
so
all day.
So riveting conversations.
He chats about super needles or something.
I've got a couple. So in Let the Right One In, which is an absolute perfect film, I hate the CGI cat. I hate it. I really hate it. It takes me away from everything. But also on Watchmen, when Night Owl is having the sex scene with Silk
Hallelujah.
Spectre.
Oh,
why? It's got the longest version of Hallelujah for about 6 minutes. And
so
I'm like,
bad.
You've nailed that film all the way through. Yeah. You've got a great soundtrack normally. Why have you got Hallelujah? It ruins it, doesn't it?
It does. You're right. That scene sucks.
So bad. And, you know, I can answer one as well for all of us as well.
Yeah.
The Bat Pod on Dark Knight. Oh, every time.
And the prequels having Hayden Christensen.
Oh, God.
It's like sand.
There's been a lot of questions coming on this episode. Hell of a lot. Don't think we've ignored you. We'll be passing them over to the next episode. We'll get to you eventually, but there's been more response now than ever. Just before we finish and wrap this bit up, I just wanted to get something off my chest. So Ben gave me a lot of jib on the last episode about not watching stuff and saying I was going to do stuff.
I jibbed him up hard.
On the last episode, if you'd listened, we talked about Goldie Hawn in Overboard.
Yes.
Yes.
So I just wanted to say I actually took the time out over Christmas and watched Overboard.
Excellent.
One of the greatest 80s feel-good films I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that one of the sons is the kid off Big as well.
Yes, yeah. Ah.
It is absolutely hilarious. I've never seen such a great, fun family film that literally is just stupid.
Yeah.
And in the end, there's like the scenes where they're baffing him in these like big barrels of water and they're just dunking them in and all this. But the fact that she believes that she's that other person,
yeah,
it's just ridiculous. But
it works.
It does. It really is amazing. And yeah. I just... Everyone, when I said to my mates that I'm watching, how have you never seen this? How have you never... It's the most 80s film ever. I did it. So keep the questions coming. The best way to go is skiptheend.co.uk, and on there's our Twitter, our Instagram, which we are getting questions on now, which is great, our Facebook page, and email us, and we'll get back to you all again in 2 weeks' time.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. It's been a good one, a compact one. Not the bloated carcass of an episode that the last one was.
I've only just finished editing the last one now. Sorry about the delay. I still can't believe it's two hours 40?
2 hours 40.
Yeah, that's
crazy. Like, but no one moaned.
No, exactly. You know, God bless our fans. They didn't moan.
No. And if you did inside and didn't want to tell us, keep it that way.
Keep it to yourself.
Next episode is going to be... Well, let's not reveal it now. Let's keep them on their toes.
Keep them on the toes in terms of the review. What are we going to be re-watching?
We're going to be re-watching One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
We are indeed. And for Mark and I, it's a watch rather than a re-watch because we've not seen it.
That is exciting.
I love stuff like that when one of us goes in dry and one doesn't.
Yeah.
But it's true, though. I do love that because you get that whole experience again.
I remember as well when we did our top five, this made my top five.
It did indeed.
Bloody hell.
So I think we already know what Gemma's... going to say about this. The topic is going to be their favourite westerns.
Wow.
Which
is a strong topic.
Yeah, and it's huge. It's so broad. There are so many great westerns. I'm going to spend the next week just watching three a day. Five a day.
I might bring my dad to the episode. It's his favourite genre. He grew me up watching them, so that'd be good. Get him his on. So yeah, no, I'm not going to do that really. What else have we got on? We are going to be masturbating over
Nicolas Cage. Come on now. That's going to be crazy.
I can see social media going crazy
for
that one.
There are three distinct eras of Nicolas Cage. There's the award-winning, fantastic actor Nicolas Cage. There's era number two, which is the wacky, out there, wide-eyed, looks like he's off his tits on coke Nicolas Cage.
Allegedly.
And then there's the third era, which is the doing any old shit to pay off his tax bill Nicolas Cage. So where are we going to pick our films from? Who knows? Who knows? Could be anything.
I'll be giving loads of stuff away and announcing the winners from this competition, but I've got some great stuff. So remember, signed Ricky Gervais stuff.
Yeah.
Prize bundles for leaving us reviews. You get loads of stuff here.
It's fantastic.
Ridiculous.
We're going to play the final round of Cast and Furious as well. At the minute, Mark's won one, Gemma's won one. So I need to win next week to tie it up and then we can have a tops off wrestle. If I lose, Mark is the champion.
Oh,
and I've never said those words before on the podcast or in life.
Literally heard it here first.
No one's ever said it, ever. Let's go to sleep.
Shall we?
Come on,
I'm tired.
It's pretty late. And the Golden Globes are on tonight and we'll have the results the next time we record. So we'll talk a bit about them, I would have thought. Oh, actually, before we go, I want to know about this little... Apparently we've got a fan.
Yes, there's a girl called Logan that listens to our episode.
Yeah.
And I work with her mom, and she came up to me the other day and said, oh, you're a bit of a celebrity in our house. I was like, what do you mean? So I didn't think those documents from the police got out. No, she said they all list her and her friends all listen to it at school, and they all talk about it, and they're quoting me and Ben mostly. And no, they say a lot as well. But they do. They have a big like talk at, I think it's school and college and stuff about the episodes, and they all get on board and watch the rewatches. And I said, I'm really sorry, I didn't realise that, you know, she's only 16. They're like, oh, it's fine, all kids are adults nowadays. And it's got a point, really. Yeah. I always think that kids shouldn't be hearing the F word and jizzing and spaffing.
Spadge.
And
spadge.
All this
don't
sort
forget
of stuff.
Spadge.
But yeah, so thank you, Logan. I hope you're listening now and you can show off to your mates now. You've got a shout out.
Our friend Logan.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's
and a very cool name as well.
And indeed we will be reviewing that as well at some point.
Yeah, in a couple of months' time.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Anything else to say, guys?
Nah. See you in 2 weeks.
And I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad. The dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. Run in circles, it's a very, very mad world. Mad world. Enlarging your world.